for Chris Hedges. Judy, it's all for you.
Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future is going to be talking about the middle class, how this shutdown is going to affect them, where we're going down the road. Also in the first hour, Cerie Stevens, executive director of Planned Parenthood Pennsylvania, going to be talking about, obviously, they're the reason for this whole shutdown. And you had a senator saying 90% of what her group does is abortions. So we're going to find out exactly what Planned Parenthood does and talk about, why they're shutting down the government in the second hour. Brian Miller from United for a Fair Economy going to talk about an alternative vision and a campaign that they're moving forward. I think is a good idea, maybe something we've been talking about on this program for a while, asking those who are doing very, very well to contribute a little more to help the country out. And I'm in favor of giving them little flags to wave to say, I contributed, kind of like they do with United Way drives or, other charitable drives. I mean, charity begins at home, right, folks? So I think our billionaire class can chip in a little bit to help keep the government open, help keep the police on the streets, help keep the paychecks flowing to the people who are defending this country. Also in the third hour, Jeff Johnson, president of the Washington AFL-CIO, is going to be talking about budget problems out there in Washington, kind of the same that we have here. Massive cuts to education, massive cuts to social programs, massive cuts to things that benefit the working people while you have that billionaire. And look, Washington's got Microsoft out there. They can help. And we're going to talk about the student and labor actions that are going on out there because I think that's the stuff that's going to have to happen here. So here we are, T-minus 2 hours, 57 minutes. Till the government shuts down, till the T-Twizzlers get their wish and they get all tingly in the panties and all, woohoo! Get that warm, fuzzy feeling all over. They've accomplished something. But the reality is they're going to accomplish nothing but more divisiveness. This is not a good thing. I'm hoping there's a compromise. But understand. The T-Twizzlers want this. This is their defining moment. Anyway, a group of about 7,000 people on Facebook, and this is an interesting Facebook page, they have said that it's starting on Saturday morning. They're going to march to John Boehner's D.C. home and dump their trash in his lawn. Since evidently the government's going to shut down, means no garbage pickup, they are going to gonna take to his house and dump off their trash. Last I checked, there was a little over 7,000 people who have signed up for it. So if you're John Boehner, maybe keep a couple of hefty bags around. I don't know. But at the end of it, really, what's going on here is this is going to be the frustration of people, especially in D.C., because they're really held hostage in this because they have no other say. So if they shut the government down, all services to D.C. residents are shut off. So, you know, that's something else to think about. Robert Reich had an interesting quote today, though, that I thought was kind of interesting. He says, as Americans get ready to file their taxes, politicians are battling over how much to cut government spending in order to reduce huge deficits. Curiously, though, one option for deficit reduction seems to be off the table. And you can say it with me because you know what it is, too. He says that that's to raise taxes on the very rich. Completely off the table. And what's interesting to me is we've been trained in the working class. We've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to react negatively to the word taxes and to the thought of a tax increase without thinking of where these tax increases are coming from. And, you know, as we've been talking about for some time, had the Bush tax cuts not happened, this country would be nowhere near the debt that we're in. Even with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, even with that, we would not be anywhere near the debt we're in now. So, you know, when I look at this, 48% of the budget deficit are those tax cuts. So, you know, we were told if we give these tax cuts out, we hand this money out to the very, very wealthy. We're going to create jobs. It didn't happen. We were told that, you know, rivers of honey and gold would flow. It didn't happen. And what's interesting to me is the more you delve into it, the more you realize, and I hope you get this, that since the Reagan years, I really do, I hope this is something that people are starting to understand. While, you know, Reagan, you may see him as some deity, the reality is he was a very corporate president. He truly believed in this supply-side voodoo economics, that if you give corporations, you give the wealthy all of that they could possibly want, that some of it would fall off the table to the rest of us. It would down. It would rain down on us. And I ask people, you know, over the last 30 years, has that rain been coming down? Has it been steady? No. What we've seen is a bunch of boom and bust. And we've seen a lot of jobless recoveries. What happens is they take the money that we're giving them back in tax cuts and they move jobs out of the country. And what I'm saying is it's enough already. I agree with the tea twizzlers. I'm taxed enough already. I'm there. But if you look at the reality of what's going on over the last 35 years, you've seen a massive shifting of taxation from corporate America to individuals. So when they push that whole Horatio Alger vision of America, that was only for taxes. You know, you're an individual. Here's your boatload of taxes, which is why every time they talk about the debt and the deficit, the debt, they talk about in individual terms. This is what's going to cost you personally. Even though we know that, you know, that's way overly simplistic, since most of the debt is in treasury bonds. People invest in that. They're getting their money back at some point. So again, you know, when you go back to this, you stop and think about how this shift has happened. This massive shifting has happened from being taxation on corporate America to taxation on the individual. In fact, some of the interesting numbers that I've seen, the Urban Institute and the Brookings Institute, they came out with a couple of numbers of how the percentage of federal revenue coming from individuals has gone through the roof. In fact, the federal revenue from individuals is almost 42%. So almost 42% of the revenue coming into the country is from you and me, from working people, from individuals. That amount from corporate America is under 9%. So understand that. Now, this is the interesting part of this. Because back in the 50s, when they say, you know, back in the fabulous 50s, when everything was wonderful, that number was about 30%. So you've seen this massive shift of money from corporate America going to government, not going to government anymore, going to the very, very wealthy. Then get tax breaks and loopholes to where they don't have to pay the same taxes that you pay. They get most of their income is capital gains, a nice 15%. And we hear this same argument about Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has the highest tax rate in the country. Yet three quarters of the companies here don't pay it. We hear the same thing about the U.S. The U.S. has the highest tax rate in the world, or one of them. Japan's is higher. Yet nobody pays it. So this massive shift of wealth from you and me to the very top of the investor class has been going on. And I agree. I am angry. I am ticked off, just like the most rabid Tea Party member. I get it. I'm ticked off. You go back to the Reagan years, the biggest increase in taxation on the working people of the country in the history of the country. I think it was five times the FICA tax they raised it, up to 13.5%. Up to 13%. Think about that. A massive tax increase on you and me. And it only went up to a certain number. I think back then it was like 80,000. It's up to 106,400 now. Why is that capped? Well, it's capped so it affects you and it affects me. And what I'm saying is, and I've been saying this for the longest time, the country's not broke. The country is not broke. If we had the money that we had back in the 50s, if we were taxing corporations the way we did in the 50s, taxing the very wealthy at rates that we did back in the 50s. Remember back in the 50s when we built highways? Remember when we built schools? We had balanced budgets for the most part. We created NASA out of nothing. We went to the moon. Remember all that? That was like investment. Those were tax dollars at work. Today, we can't even keep a decent power grid up. We can't seem to build a rail system. We're arguing about, your taxes will go up if you put a rail system in. So we're going to deal with the massive congestion that's going to happen. And, well, that's just you little people. And you ask, well, what's the government going to do with more money? Well, they're going to build stuff. They're going to create jobs. See, this is what the Republicans right now aren't getting. All of this is about jobs. They were elected in November to create jobs, which means investment. Yet all I see, a Republican governor, Republican legislature across the country, slash education, slash funding, slash, slash, slash. All I'm seeing on the national level is cut, 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 cut. That, all of that is constriction. All of that is moving us in the opposite direction. I think we're going to suffer greatly for this. Instead of having the vision of this country like FDR had, and it was on this day back in 1935 that the Congress voted to approve the WPA, the Public the Works Project Administration, which did enormous good, built the Triborough Bridge, built a whole bunch of bridges and highways and dams and public works projects, schools and all kind of stuff. Yet we don't seem to have that vision anymore. All we have is this visceral reaction to taxation. You know what? You know how much it cost? It cost $880 million back in 1935 to do this. They employed more than 8.5 million people. That is how you get an economy moving. You put people back to work. You get them the skills that they need. Not this. Not this at all. And if we do shut down tonight, it is the Tea Party. And this will be their victory. And it'll be shouldered solely by the Tea Party, and I give them sole credit. Because some of the sane rational conservatives right now are saying, no, we need to broker a deal here, because this is going to kill us. So we're going to see where this takes us tonight. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future. We're back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin working families rose to the challenge of their first big political ballot box test since Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights began in February. Voters defeated a self-described conservative state Supreme Court justice. But as Jesse Russell reports, that razor-thin victory must still withstand a recount.
Tuesday saw historic spring elections in Wisconsin with both supporters and opponents of Governor Scott Walker on the edge of their seats, waiting for results from what should have been a mundane race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Going into the race after the primary election in February, incumbent Justice David Prosser was the hands-on favorite, having pulled in 55% of the vote over his second-highest leading opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, who only received 25% of the vote. After Walker introduced legislation that would limit collective bargaining rights for state workers, and Prosser indicated he supported Walker's efforts, the race became electrified. With all precincts reporting on Wednesday, Kloppenburg held a 204-vote lead. A recount is likely. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Holtz from Tuesday sent a signal to the state.
Clearly the results from yesterday's election represent a watershed moment for Wisconsin and a Waterloo for Scott Walker.
The energy from Tuesday's election is now expected to be passed on to 8 attempts to recall Senate Republicans who voted with Walker. Stephanie Taylor is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Big victories in target districts like Randy Hopper and Dan Kopanky. It looks like Joanne Kloppenburg took over 55% of the vote in Robert Cole's district and over 55% in Luther Olson's district. So this bodes very, very well for the recall campaigns against the Republican state senators.
America's labor movement says it's deeply disappointed that the Obama administration has signaled it will move in the near future to submit the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement to a vote in Congress. The AFL-CIO says the level of violence in Colombia is still unacceptable for trade unionists and human rights defenders. With the murders of union activists and oppressive conditions facing workers trying to organize there, the AFL says it remains strongly opposed to the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the Labor Federation appreciates the Obama administration's efforts to negotiate a separate action plan to try and address human and labor rights concerns, but that plan doesn't go far enough and doesn't guarantee an end to violence against workers trying to organize in Colombia. 51 trade unionists were murdered in Colombia last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, we're going to see what's going on, what's happening tonight. We're counting down to midnight when the looks like inevitable shutdown, the Tea Party shutdown, is going to happen. Really, this is what they want. They want this chaos. They want this to happen so that they can ram through more massive cuts in social programs, more destruction of Medicare, more of the destruction of what you and I benefit from. Frustrating stuff. Here to talk about the Paul Ryan budget and some other things is our good friend Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future. Bill, welcome to the program.
Always great to be with you.
Kind of frustrating evening tonight as, again, it looks like our government is dysfunctional because we've got some recalcitrant Republicans who are just hell-bent on destruction.
Well, you know, there are a whole lot of Republicans out there, and we have this up in ourfuture.org, that have been eagerly clamoring for a shutdown. A lot of them want this. I would personally put Speaker Boehner in that category, but he doesn't seem to have the control of his caucus, so... Even if, and there's some rumors that they might be a midnight hour deal, it would be very much up in the air if he could sell that deal to the House, because there's so many folks out there saying we need to sacrifice the operations of government to make our ideological points about whether it's about abortion or about the environment. They don't seem to want to take yes for an answer, no matter how much Democrats concede.
And that's the thing that gets me is Democrats have been doing what they're good at doing, which is giving ground, compromise. Because we've seen the number keep going up, the amount that they're willing to cut keep going up. It's just that they're not willing to give up on the Planned Parenthood thing and a couple other riders that the Republicans want to jam in there.
This is, it's the frustrating part of this is, on one hand, policy-wise, Democrats keep offering more cuts, you know, that sort of policy is bad for the economy in the short term when the economy is still shaky. You don't want to be weakening the juice that the government gives the economy. So in that sense, that's bad. On the other hand, politically speaking, presuming there is a shutdown, it's going to help with the argument that Republicans are completely unserious about even their own alleged arguments about cutting spending. Given the opportunity to cut spending, they throw it away because they want to ride their ideological hobby horses.
Yeah, well, because they want exactly what they want. And I still think if we would have given them the entire $61 billion that they were asking for, that wouldn't have been enough. They would have still continued to cling, and they still may, to this idea of destroying the, you know, Planned Parenthood and a lot of the other ideological riders that they've thrown in.
You know, the same thing happened in Wisconsin to Scott Walker when Scott Walker was trying to break the union there, and the union leaders at one point said, "Okay, we will accept. We'll all the financial concessions you're asking of us, but we won't give up our basic right to negotiate."
Right.
And after Walker had made so much, this was about the budget and not about ideology, given the opportunity to take that deal, said, "No, it's still not good enough. We have to end collective bargaining rights." And no one could make sense of what he was saying. That really destroyed his poll numbers. You know, he won, quote unquote, because he cheated and ran it through the legislature against their rules, apparently.
Right.
But politically speaking, he got really hammered because his arguments stopped making any sense. And I think if a shutdown does happen, the House Republicans are going to be in that same kind of predicament.
I got to be honest. I've got a 3-year-old who's more compromising than the Republican Party. during one of her temper tantrums, I think she's more compromised. Let's talk about this Ryan budget. What I've been saying is this, you know, this is just, one, it's all the things that they've been whispering to each other, like giddy little schoolgirls in their little think tanks and private clubs. But on the other hand, destructive to working people, especially when you're talking about destroying Medicare.
Well, that's, you know, we have a new site, themiddleclass.org, themiddleclass.org, where we're going to be doing breaking analysis of these sorts of proposals from the middle class perspective. And while Ryan has been trying to present his budget as something that's going to be a fiscally responsible document, you know, we break down how it would be disastrous for the middle class, in many respects because it just smashes Medicare into bits, which has basically allowed seniors to stay in the middle class and not be driven into poverty once they are done with their working lives. Ryan is trying to wrap up his policy in a lot of policy jargon, so it's confusing what he's going to do. But let's make it clear. What he's going to do is end Medicare as we know it today and then turn into literally a lump sum handout to insurance companies that wouldn't even be enough to cover what expected health care costs would be. So invariably, either seniors won't get sufficient health care coverage or they'll be forced to pay more to get sufficient health care coverage. And that is exactly what Medicare was supposed to avoid.
You know, I look at this shutdown and, you know, we were doing some research today and we came across an ad from 1995, the last time this happened. And it's just, it's eerie. Listen to this.
This public service announcement is for anyone who will ever be 65 or older. Monday, word leaked of a plot to steal one of your most valuable assets, your Medicare. The thieves have been identified as insurance companies, desperate to get at the Medicare Trust Fund. They are abetted by Republicans whose budget replaces Medicare with a voucher to buy private insurance. The same Republicans who refuse to end tax breaks for millionaires want to put you at the mercy of the big insurance companies. If you know the whereabouts of these Republicans, call them. Tell them, hands off my Medicare.
You know, and that was 1995.
Yeah, that's when Speaker Newt Gingrich said that he wanted to see Medicare wither on the vine. You know, they can't stop themselves. And even though, you know, there are a few cooler heads in the Republican Party who have said a shutdown is a bad idea and let's not spring these conservative purist ideas on the public before we really had a chance to have a dialogue about it. Don't just ram it down everyone's throat. That's going to backfire on us in the same way that it did 15 years ago. And so Paul Ryan, you know, ignores that advice, puts this on the table. I mean, this is going to be voted on the House floor on Wednesday. This is a 10-year budget that would completely unravel a key component of the social contract for 5 decades. And after all of their whining the last 2 years that Democrats were rushing everything, even though things were debated to death over and over again, they literally want to do this in a one-week period. And there are Republicans who, from swing districts, who were complaining anonymously to Politico, saying, why are you making us vote on a controversial document like this when it's going to be terrible for our reelection prospects in our district? Why are you making us do it? It's just unnecessary. But that's what they are insisting, that's what the party leadership is insisting that they do. And it's a gift for us because it makes it a lot easier for us to communicate. This is what they're really up to. This is the agenda. Don't buy the spin. Don't buy the pretty ads. They are hell-bent on destroying the things that keep the middle class going.
Yeah, and the part of me says the reason they're ramming it through like this is they want a larger period of time so that they hope that the amnesia that the American people seem to be suffering from, since we can't seem to remember that it was the massive Bush tax cuts and the two wars that have created this massive deficit, because understand, when Bush took office, we had a balanced budget. We were talking about, they were projecting surpluses for as far as the eye could see. Alan Greenspan said, we don't know what we're going to do when we pay the debt off. We have no idea. And yet here we are after those Bush tax cuts, those handouts, and his two wars. Look where we are.
There's no apology for that. There's no reassessment. There's nothing from the Republican Party or conservative actors saying, you know what, we got that one wrong. Sorry about that. We've looked back at our philosophy and our policies, and we've made some adjustments going forward, so this hasn't been again. There's no acceptance of responsibility for their records. Instead, they just tried the same types of proposals.
No, in fact, they're hell-bent on it worked. They're bent on that it worked. And again, I go back to who did it work for? You know, when people say, I want politicians to work for the people, I always ask, which people are we talking about?
Newt Gingrich himself has literally been going on tour saying that the shutdown worked in 1995. They can't even admit that that was a total political disaster for them, but they have no ability to accept responsibility for their actions.
So, you know, as I've been saying, and maybe you'll disagree with me, I don't know that we have this grand spending problem as the mainstream media has put out there, as the Republicans are pushing. And sadly enough, a number of Democrats have bought onto this. We need to cut. I think we got a revenue problem. I think we've got corporations who are leaving this country. GE pays zero. ExxonMobil, they didn't pay anything. We got all these big companies making big money, yet they're not contributing, if you will, to the state of the country.
That's right. So to the extent that there is spending waste, and you know it's impossible to have a perfect record. You know, no one has a perfect record in their household, let alone a business, let alone a government. There's always something, but it's not the main driver of any long-range fiscal problem. Our tax system is skewed to the wealthy. That is a major issue that needs to be dealt with. And the one thing that Paul Ryan is correct about is that the biggest issue long-term fiscal-wise is health care. It's not Medicare. It's the entirety of the private health care system that drives up costs, which we have begun to start dealing with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And people have a lot of varying opinions how effective it will be. That's legitimate, but it's passed. It is law. You try it out. You see what works. You see what doesn't. And you build on it as you go along. And there's this reluctance to acknowledge that we're already on that path. Republicans don't, because they want to treat it as if it is, the pathway to communism. And Democrats aren't, unfortunately, because all the polling is telling them that no one buys the argument that health care bill will cut the deficit, even though all the experts say that. It's not intuitive to people that expanding coverage to 30 million people can cut the deficit at the same time. So they've told themselves, it's too hard an argument to make, so let's not beat our heads against the wall with it. I understand the logic there, but it's very unfortunate because it leaves the public far more ignorant.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future, their website, ourfuture.org. They've also got themiddleclass.org, which I think is a great website. I've used it for a while. This is a relaunch of this?
It's a relaunch. It started with a Progressive Punch and the Drum Major Institute. We're working with Progressive Punch now at the Campaign for America's Future. We're working with Progressive Punch on now the Campaign for America's Future, and we want to beef it up so it's not just a way to research the past voting records of Congress people in regards to their voting patterns for the middle class, but also to add in that breaking analysis of things like the Ryan budget. So before the votes happen, you can get a sense of what's on the table that's going to be good or bad for the middle class, and the middle class can then have a better guidepost how to pressure their congresspeople.
Aside from the destruction of Medicare, which I think is horrible, what else is in this Ryan budget that we should be worrying about?
Well, two things. You know, it's the same, you know, 1980s voodoo economics nonsense. You know, if we cut taxes for the wealthy more, I mean, they want us, you know, completely get rid of the estate tax, you know, the tax that goes on multimillionaire heirs and heiresses, and try to pawn that off and say it's going to bring in more revenue and create jobs. It's that same voodoo economics that's been disproven time and time again, but they just can't accept it. And in fact, they know they have a problem, that they have nothing on the table that actually creates jobs. They've run the House for 3 months now. They literally have not produced one job-creating idea. So what they did with this Ryan budget was they gave it to the Right Wing Heritage Foundation, said, hey, can you cook up some numbers for us that say this is going to create jobs, even though no independent economist is going to say so. So they obliged. They said it was going to create, you know, 1 million-plus jobs a year. They said it was going to drive the unemployment to 2.8%. At the end of the 10 years, which was mocked so wildly, it is such a ludicrous projection that they took it down off the Heritage website because they couldn't defend it.
Have we ever had 2.8% unemployment?
I think in wartime, you know, in the 40s. You know, that's the only time where we reach levels like that. And you're certainly not going to get there with a budget that does not even try to create one job directly.
Amazing, amazing. But, you know, the thing is, and this is what bothers me, they don't have a problem putting it out there, and there are talk programs, there are mainstream media programs, fake news over at Fox, who will take that at face value and report it as absolute God's honest truth.
Well, you know, that's, you know, the upside, the downside of the modern media landscape is that people can choose to stay in their cocoons and not read true objective analysis of things, but also gives us the opportunity to hold up to the light when the traditional media falls down the job. So that's what we're trying to do at themiddleclass.org, and make sure people who are looking for that kind of analysis have a play for it and see what's there, and then you can take that analysis and run with it.
Along with our future.org, we're going to add this to our daily sites, themiddleclass.org. Bill Shearer, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Good news, people. America's wages are up. The average worker is making more today than a year ago. How much more, you ask? Get ready to be excited. 58 cents a week. Of course, averages don't tell the whole story. Economist John Kenneth Galbraith graphically explained the problem of averages with a story about a 6-foot-tall man who drowned when wading across a stream with an average depth of 3 feet. Similarly, while average workers are trying to decide how to spend those extra 5 dimes, a nickel, and 3 pennies they're getting each week, your average CEO is wallowing in an extra $860,000 this year over last. That's just the increase in their bonuses. It does not include their multimillion-dollar salaries, which are also up, nor their golden pensions, free health care, limousines, corporate jets, etc. And, as you might imagine, many corporate chieftains did much better than average in their bonus checks. Take Robert Iger of Walt Disney, Inc. He pocketed a bonus of $13.5 million this year, 45% more than he got a year ago. Well, explained his PR agent, bonuses provide for excellent executive performance, and Iger deserves his riches this year because Disney's profits are up by 24%. Swell, but why is his increase double that increase in profits? And by the way, Robert's salary is $2 million a year. Why does he need any extra incentive to job? One more question. Does Iger really think that he alone produced Disney's rise in profits? Notice that the animators, performers, and other hard-working employees at Disney World and Disney Studios got no 45% increase in their pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, no one goes to Disney World to see Robert Iger. If he wants bonus money, tell him to put on a Mickey Mouse costume in the wilting heat of Florida summer and earn it. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. According to a recently released crime index released by the Institute for Economics and Peace, southern states are the most violent in the country. This is the first U.S. peace index. It was created by pulling in some government statistical data from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the FBI, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The top 10 lists of states that are the least peaceful: Louisiana, Tennessee, Nevada, Florida, Alabama, Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Maryland. The most peaceful states are Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Minnesota, North Dakota, Utah, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Iowa, and Washington. Pennsylvania ranked 21st on the list. The first thing that grabs me is the fact that of the top 10 least peaceful states, nine of them are right-to-work states. Nine of the least peaceful states, these are the most violent states, these are right-to-work states. While only three of the most peaceful states are right-to-work states. And I find it quite interesting that we've got this going on. Amazing stuff. And you look at some of the other numbers that have come out of this. The fact of the matter is the states that are some of the least peaceful states, some of the more violent ones, also have really high poverty rates. Arkansas, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, South Carolina, Tennessee, all of those right-to-work states, massively high poverty rates. In fact, those are among the top 10, Mississippi being the highest poverty state in the country. So, you know, when we're going down this road talking about right to work, understand there's a lot of stuff with this. There are a lot of problems. And what worries me is Pennsylvania, number 21 right now on the list of the most peaceful. You know, there are only 20 states ahead of us. We pass this right-to-work legislation, we see wages go down, we see jobs being destroyed. I'm telling you, we may have problems down the road. Anyway, let's go to the phones. I got James on line one. How you doing tonight, James?
Okay, I get to play working-class geek for a few minutes.
Hit me.
Okay, I saw what happened in Wisconsin, you know, with the votes appearing out of nowhere.
Yep.
I have my doubts. And there's two big things. First of all, the volunteer said that she forgot to save the file.
Oops.
Which means that probably it would be very easy for her to have gone in the next day and input, shall we say, the right or the right numbers.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions here.
The timestamp is going to be off.
Yep.
The second thing is that I find it a little odd that nobody, somewhere up the line, be it in Madison or wherever, after that election, somebody didn't say, hey, wait a minute, a precinct has not reported yet. Something is not right.
I'm right there with you. It stinks to high heaven.
That's just what I wanted to say. I mean, I didn't want to bump I don't want to take time out of you talking to the person from Planned Parenthood because one of my Facebook friends would probably be mad at me.
All right. Thanks so much, James. Appreciate
it. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
You know, but you look at these numbers going back to this poverty, to this crime index, you know, these right-to-work states that are the most violent in the country, and you know, all southern states just happen to be. You look at some of the numbers that come around that, some of the lost income, the fact that, like, the state of Maine, violence every year costs the average person in the state of Maine about $656. And that has to do with jails and police and all of the stuff that goes in with that. The state of Louisiana pays almost $2,500 in those kind of negative numbers. What could happen if you, I don't know, gave people reasonable wages, had jobs for people to, what do you think would happen? I say that $2,500 that Louisiana is spending could be much better spent on positives other than warehousing people. And, of course, the southern states have much higher prison populations as well. So, you know, good for them. Now, Maine, our friends up in Maine, they're really trying, even though right now they are the most peaceful state in the country. They're working on it. They're working on it because lawmakers on Wednesday approved the legalization of, I can't even believe this one, of one-armed people to carry switchblades. I am not making this up. The Maine legislature has pushed through and approved the legalization of switchblade carrying one-armed people. They will be the first state in the country to allow the spring action knives to be carried only by one-armed people, though. So,
form.
I gotta be honest, it's funny. But, you know, again, what does this have to do with creating jobs? I don't know that the switchblade industry is really, you know, looking to ramp up production to help offset the costs there. Just amazing stuff to me. And, you know, again, it goes back to this bizarre nonsense that our rightward-leaning friends do. This thought that there's this great need for one-armed people to carry switchblades? I don't know. I just don't know. Anyway, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Cerie Stevens from Planned Parenthood and find out why she's forcing this shutdown. We're right back after this.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, Visit AppsMe13.org. We are AppsMe.
We make that happen.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
So I'm watching on TV today. And, you know, as this whole budget debacle is moving its way down the road, as this whole shutdown is coming to a head, and I guess they've moved the meeting back from 9 o'clock to 10:30, there's probably going to be some agreement. It'll be interesting to see what it is. But as I'm watching this on TV, I see Senator John Kyle, who gets on television, and honestly, I'm not even going to say what he said. Here, listen for yourself. This is just remarkable.
Everybody goes to clinics, to hospitals, to doctors, and so on. Some people go to Planned Parenthood. But you don't have to go to Planned Parenthood to get your cholesterol or your blood pressure checked. If you want an abortion, you go to Planned Parenthood. And that's well over 90% of what Planned Parenthood does.
Well over 90%. I mean, that's remarkable. It's amazing. It's a lot of work. Problem is, it's not true. Just like a lot of the things that come out of our friends on the extreme right, truth doesn't seem to be all that important to them. That's why I've asked Sari Stevens, Executive Director of Planned Parenthood Pennsylvania, to come talk to us. Sari, thanks for taking time for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
90%, huh?
Mm-hmm. Not so much.
Not so much.
Nope.
Some statistics I've seen, about 2%.
In Pennsylvania, it's 4%.
What do you do 90% of the time, then?
We do blood pressure screenings and cervical cancer and breast cancer screenings, basic gynecological preventative care, family planning visits, your annual gynecological exam that most married women have.
And, you know, what would you say your income bracket would be, the people who come to your clinics, the people who come to use your services? Where on the socioeconomic ladder do you think the majority of them fall?
Well, I can tell you specifically, actually, 75% of them are at 150% of the poverty line or below, so that's $33,000 for a family of four a year.
So, you know, I look at this, and because I knew that as well, the question I have is, you know, why does it seem that our friends on the right have taken this really hard stance against you? Because the reality is, most people are saying that the whole discussion of the shutdown is based purely on this small amount of money the federal government gives to groups like yours.
Yeah, I mean, the irony of it all is that this measure actually costs the taxpayers money. When women have access to birth control and have healthy pregnancies and detect cancer early, the Commonwealth saves money and the government saves money.
You know, because it's that whole prevention thing that there was this guy, and I think his name was Ben Franklin. He said something about cure and prevention and pound a cure and all that that I think we've forgotten.
Yeah, and I mean, the debate's all about abortion, right? I mean, that's, you heard Senator Kyle, right? Talking about abortion, and that's the reason that they're attacking Planned Parenthood. When Planned Parenthood isn't here to provide preventative services for women, unintended pregnancies are going to go through the roof. We provide 50% of the family planning visits in Pennsylvania alone.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, and this is a story I think I've told several times on the air. When I was a kid, the whole Roe versus Wade thing was in the news, and my mother had, you know, when it was in the, when the news had told me that a friend of hers had gone and gotten a botched backroom abortion and had died from the procedure. I remember that as a kid, and I got to be honest, as the father of two daughters, I don't ever want to see us go back to that.
I don't. That's why I'm in the job I'm in. I have a similar story in my family as well.
So I guess the question I have for my friends on the right is, you know, why are we supporting people like Kyle? Why are we supporting people like the Boehners of the world, who are just ideologically opposed to anything that helps women in this vein?
You know, I mean, between us, and all your listeners know, it's not rational, and that's what's really peculiar about the whole thing. You know, and they keep their eye on polling like we all do. Polling is off the charts. So we just did a February poll with Susquehanna Research, and 2/3 of the public in Pennsylvania support continued funding for Planned Parenthood, every political party and every region of the state. So the public is not on that side, but they still can't get off of it.
Well, because they are led by a very small number of ideologues.
Yep.
And that's what this is really about. You know, I've taken the position that they want to move women back, you know, and back to the days when, you know, women were barefoot and pregnant, and this whole ideological era of the 50s where the man was the head and the woman was subservient, which, you know, as a man, I don't think would be all that bad of an idea. My problem is, I've got two daughters that I don't think I'd be too thrilled with that scenario. But going back and undoing Griswold and undoing some of the advances that women have had, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an obsession. It really does seem like we're going to shut down the government over the will of the American public. 1 in 5 American women will walk through Planned Parenthood's doors. This is actually costing the government more money, but we're willing to put the government on the line as a result. So I don't know. I'm as confused as you are.
Well, it must mean that you're a very powerful special interest in Washington.
I think so. I hope so.
I don't. I don't think that you guys have that much money.
No, we don't have money. But we have people, and we have the public support.
So, you know, as we're moving down the line, and I'm thinking they're going to come up with an agreement. They're going to push this off. But this is a battle I do believe is going to rage on for some time. What are you guys doing to reach out to try and get people to call their representatives? Are you doing any of that? I should ask first.
The outpouring has been incredible. It really, really has. And I have to say, you know, Senator Casey, he is not in favor of abortion. We don't see eye to eye on that issue. But he is one of those pragmatic Democrats that knows that this is an abortion-reducing measure, that birth control reduces abortion, that detecting cancer early saves taxpayers' money. He gets it. And he's standing strong with us. Actually, Senator Toomey got up on the floor today and said, you know, we don't have the votes. Cut it out. Move on. Let's get back to the business of creating jobs and fixing the economy. This is not what we're here to fight about.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems absolutely dumb to me to be putting this front and center. But I think part of it had to do, and maybe you can talk a little bit about this hit piece video that they did. I think it was in New Jersey. I forget what the guy's name is, but came out with one of these well-edited, well-snipped videos to enrage people about Planned Parenthood. And I don't think you guys push back enough on it.
Yes, it's hard. I mean, the employee that was taped, secretly taped, her behavior was absolutely wrong, and she was terminated. We have tens of thousands of employees, and it is their stated purpose to undermine Planned Parenthood, to destroy us from within, and I agree, I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Yep, and that's why we've got to be involved. That's why we've got to push back. Any advice? How do our listeners help? What can I do to help?
Very easy, actually. Stand with us. I stand with PlannedParenthood.org. Sign the petition. We're at almost 1 million new members, supporters, standing with Planned Parenthood. So we need your support, and the public's on our side. And, you know, thank you to all your listeners for standing with us. We need you, and the American women that we serve need you as well.
I stand with PlannedParenthood.org. We will put a link to that on our website at TheRickSmithShow.com so people can access it from there. Suri, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, look, Jake, you know, when I look at this, the reality of this is, you know, and like I said, I remember this. I was just a kid when my mother told me this. Told me the story about a friend that had, you know, she got, you know, 16 years old, got into trouble, and chose to go see someone, you know, one of these backroom doctors, got an infection, and again, too afraid to tell anyone, and it ended up killing her. That's my problem with criminalizing it, is you're going to have that. Look, the wealthy, they're going to continue to have them as they've always had. It's the poor and the working class that are going to suffer.
That should never happen. If I could just comment on this Republican nonsense. I mean, it's like a circus, Rick. Harry Reid comes out and says, hey, it's about the ideological right. They don't want to fund Planned Parenthood, and then John Boehner comes out and says, you know, when are the Democrats going to get it in their head that they have to cut spending? It's, I mean, Boehner's trying to put on a good face, but I think the public, and I think the polls show this already, the public, not overwhelming, but I think there's more people now that blame the Republicans after more and more is coming out. And it should be. I mean, this is just pure nonsense. As far as meeting the numbers that the Republicans wanted, the Democrats, I believe the number was what, 78%? The Democrats moved about three quarters of the way towards what the Republicans wanted. I mean, I think that's a pretty good compromise. I think the Obama administration and Democrats have actually bent over backwards trying to
avert this. You know, maybe too much.
Yes.
You know, maybe this is.
Of them said, look, they had a really, they had a hard time with some of the things they gave up. But the alternative was to shut down the government. So I think the Democrats have made a good faith. And if I were the Democrats, I mean, if it has to shut down, you're going to shut it down. Because if you give into this, that's a bad, bad, bad omen.
Because this is just the first fight.
Yes.
The next one is coming. The big one is coming.
For next year.
Well, no, just in a couple of months. In May, the big one is coming. And if that goes the wrong way, the Tea Party saw this as kind of the warm-up to the big fight, which is coming. I guess May 16th is the day that we hit the cap. And if they don't raise the cap, then everything stops. And everything collapses. And it would, as Geithner said, it would be unconscionable, it would be unthinkable, and basically it would just be plain dumb, but it is what they prefer. From the Washington Post, Ezra Klein, talking about Planned Parenthood, came through with a couple of numbers saying that 35% of their money goes to sexually transmitted diseases and infections, 16% to cancer screening, 10% to other women's services, and 35% to contraception, while only 3% went to abortions. So you look at all the other stuff that they do, all the other positive that are done, and they're going to fight over something very, very small. Very small indeed. It's to me just remarkable. And taking us backwards.
Well, you know, this is, again, the reason I mentioned next year, Michelle Bachmann was on TV, radio today, national radio, and she's talking about this proposal that has been proposed on Medicare, which is basically a proposal to eliminate, and she's pointing to next year. The Republicans are seriously going to go after Medicare next year, without question. They would just love to privatize that.
Well, because they really know that now's the ripe time to do it, because they've convinced the younger generation that it's not going to be there for them. They've convinced people, you know, a little younger than me and down that, you know, all that stuff's been destroyed by those greedy geezers who are sucking the system dry, when the reality is we have a revenue problem. And having granny go to the doctor often is not a bad thing. It's actually a pretty good thing when you catch things early and you can take care of them early. Something we used to know, but something we seem to have forgotten. It's just mind-boggling. Anyway, remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, right there for your entertainment, your enjoyment. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And, you know, sometimes I like to hear the other side. The folks who disagree with me, they come right to the front, and I spend a little more time with the people I disagree with. Because it's a good exercise in discussion. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin working families rose to the challenge of their first big political ballot box test since Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights began in February. Voters defeated a self-described conservative state Supreme Court justice. But as Jesse Russell reports, that razor-thin victory must still withstand a recount.
Tuesday saw historic spring elections in Wisconsin with both supporters and opponents of Governor Scott Walker on the edge of their seats, waiting for results from what should have been a mundane race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Going into the race after the primary election in February, incumbent Justice David Prosser was the hands-on favorite, having pulled in 55% of the vote over his second-highest leading opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, who only received 25% of the vote. After Walker introduced legislation that would limit collective bargaining rights for state workers, and Prosser indicated he supported Walker's efforts, the race became electrified. With all precincts reporting on Wednesday, Kloppenburg held a 204-vote lead. A recount is likely. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate said the results from Tuesday sent a signal to the state.
Clearly the results from yesterday's election represent a watershed moment for Wisconsin and a Waterloo for Scott Walker.
The energy from Tuesday's election is now expected to be passed on to 8 attempts to recall Senate Republicans who voted with Walker. Stephanie Taylor is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Big victories in target districts like Randy Hopper and Dan Kopanky. It looks like Joanne Kloppenburg took over 55% of the vote in Robert Cole's district and over 55% in Luther Olson's district. So this bodes very, very well for the recall campaigns against the Republican state senators.
America's labor movement says it's deeply disappointed that the Obama administration has signaled it will move in the near future to submit the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement to a vote in Congress. The AFL-CIO says the level of violence in Colombia is still unacceptable for trade unionists and human rights defenders. With the murders of union activists and oppressive conditions facing workers trying to organize there, the AFL says it remains strongly opposed to the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the Labor Federation appreciates the Obama administration's efforts to negotiate a separate action plan to try and address human and labor rights concerns, but that plan doesn't go far enough and doesn't guarantee an end to violence against workers trying to organize in Colombia. 51 trade unionists were murdered in Colombia last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Yes, I'm closer than a height is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. The American Federation of Government Employees sued the Obama administration today, seeking repayment of wages lost during what is going to be the government shutdown, if it happens. Press conference tonight at 10:30, so we should hear some more there. AFGE lawsuit says that the administration has violated the Constitution's Appropriations Clause and the 13th Amendment by requiring employees to work without pay during a federal closure. Again, you know, we went through some of that stuff here in Pennsylvania, if you remember, with the payless paydays and the Governor Rendell pretty much holding the workers hostage. It's not a good thing, not a good thing at all. Anyway, let's go to the phones. I've got Eugene on line one. How are we doing tonight, Eugene?
I'm doing fine, Rick. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'm looking to see what's going to happen here tonight. If the Tea Party has that much clout to shut our government down.
Well, I sure hope not.
Yeah, I hope not too for the workers, and for the people who need the services. But maybe this is a fight that has to be had. Let's talk about your position. You work for the government, correct?
I work for the American Federation of Government Employees, representing federal workers.
What is this going to mean if tonight at 10:30 they don't say something positive, and at midnight they shut the government down? What does it mean for your people?
Well, it means furloughs and possibly some employees losing their jobs permanently, but definitely furloughs. So they may have to go to work. One of the local presidents called me about 30 minutes ago to let me know that Garcia told the workers to come to work and that they wouldn't be paid on Monday if the furlough goes forward. So we're just hoping for the best.
Yeah, I hear you. Why would you say that there are going to be jobs lost permanently? There's a lot of people who believe that they're just going to shut the government down for a couple of days. They'll have their little infighting, and then everything will ramp right back up. It'll be the same as it was before.
Well, it's my belief that once this budget has been resolved, they're going to go right into the 2012 budget, and I believe they're going to be talking about cutting trillions of dollars. And based on what some of the Democrats have done in the last year or so, they may not fight as vigorously as we would like to see, and therefore there could be some job loss if the budget is cut as drastically as I'm predicting. Things don't go well with the pending budget.
You know, we keep talking about cutting. And, you know, the theme that I've been running with is we don't have that big of a spending problem. As we've been told, we have this massive spending problem. Spending's out of control. I've been saying we've got a massive revenue problem. Our revenue problem has gotten out of control, that we've allowed the ultra-wealthy and the big multinational corporations to walk away from their responsibility to this country.
Yeah, I agree totally. If the 1% or the 2% of the wealthiest people in the country paid their fair share, we wouldn't have the problem that we're having now. They're basically trying to balance the budget on working people's back.
You know, you look at the after the November elections, and they told us it was about jobs. You know, they were going to create all these jobs, and then the first thing they did after the November election in the lame duck session was hand out almost $70 billion a year in handouts to the very wealthy by giving those estate tax handouts and the tax handouts to the top 2%. Now we're talking about slashing $61 billion in services to people. Personally, I think we should go back after that nearly $70 billion that we handed out last year and say that's where we should start first.
Well, I totally agree with you, Rick, and I sort of blame the Republicans right now, but the Democrats for the 2011 budget, they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency. They could have passed the budget before the November election, and we wouldn't be going through this situation we're dealing with right now. So, I mean, I know that Boehner seem to be taking marching orders from some of the Tea Party people, but I think the Republicans have a point, but I don't agree with them, nor do I agree totally with what the Democrats did. They should have passed the budget in the prior to October 1 of last year.
Yeah,
and they did.
Well, I mean, to be honest, the Democrats have rabbit ears. One of the things that I've said our president has is like the baseball analogy. He's got rabbit ears like they do. When the Republicans say something, it hits that echo chamber, and he listens. If you remember during that whole run-up to the election, the Republicans saying, well, we can't do this right now because, you know, the pressures of the election, we should put it off until after the election. And you're right. The Democrats, they listened. And again, failed to lead.
Yeah, I that's my perspective, and I think it'll be an awfully bad situation for workers and seniors if they do the shutdown. The people on Social Security and military personnel, those people are a lot of my concern. I'm concerned about the people that go to work every day that work for the government, but I'm especially concerned about senior citizens, military personnel, more so than the workers. I probably shouldn't be saying that since I represent them, but that's the way I feel personally.
Yeah,
but I'd hate to see the shutdown altogether.
Yeah, and look, you know, you're talking about paying for people, and Republicans don't seem to mind that. And to be honest, if this happens, there's no blame. I don't believe there's any blame for the Democrats in this example, because they have given, and it hasn't done any good.
Well, Senator Reid is a pretty strong senator, and I think that he's an honorable man, and I think he's trying to do the best he can. I think Boehner's under a lot of pressure with his caucus, and I think it's going to be very difficult for him to do anything other than what he's doing. I think he's in an awkward situation, and I think he probably realizes that Obama's going to get reelected, and he may be trying to strategize for the presidency in 2016, trying to position themselves, because I think in the state that I live in, the Republicans generally don't win any senatorial or we vote primarily for the Democratic presidency. And I think with the Latino votes getting to be so much of an issue in our country that it's going to definitely affect the Republicans' ability to get their votes as well as some of the other minorities.
So, well, yeah, so maybe there's a good, there's an interesting idea there. Maybe they're overreaching right now because they know they don't have much time.
I tend to agree with that your perspective on that. I think it's going to be very difficult. I think they see the handwriting on the wall, and I think they're just trying to hold on to what they have. They only have one house of the Congress currently, and it's going to be very difficult from what I believe for them to get the presidency. And if they lose seats in the House, they can be right back to where they were in 2008. So,
last question. I've got for you. You know, let's say tonight doesn't bring us any results, and we do end up in shutdown mode. What's AFG going to do moving forward to help its members to help fight this whole thing?
Well, as you probably know, we're affiliated with the AFL-CIO, and a lot of our members will be able, if they have problems with, say, getting food and things like that, maybe our central labor councils will be able to help them. But what AFG has done in particular is set up a website, and we're going to be sending out emails to them, letting them know on an ongoing basis what we see happening and where they need to go and who they need to contact to get, appropriate services.
All right.
And, of course, we're going to be filed a lawsuit a couple of days ago, and we're going to continue to try to pressure our legislators to do the right thing, both Republican and Democrats.
All right. Excellent stuff. Eugene, I appreciate the information. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
All righty. You know, I look at this, and again, you look at this whole shutdown, the possibility of this happening, to be dangerous stuff. Dangerous to be the ones who end up paying the freight. Much like, and I remember the Payless Payday. I remember, the folks here in Harrisburg who were going to work, even though they weren't going to, they weren't going to pay them.
And the numbers I saw right now, taxpayers about $1 billion.
It is what it is, and hopefully we will be. We will figure this out. And again, at 10:30 tonight, Reed is going to hold a press conference. They've pushed it back from 9 o'clock to 10:30. So I'm sure they're still working on it. Maybe the announcement will come then. I'm hoping. But I got to be honest. There's part of me that says, maybe this is when the fight has to happen. Maybe this is going to be that moment where the Tea Party is exposed for the radical that they are.
Well, and here's what has to happen, and I think it will, Rick. I think these Republicans in swing districts, marginal districts, if this happens and they start getting a lot of heat, I think some of them might get a backbone pretty quick and stand up to the Tea Party.
Well, we will see. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be what happens with these guys who got elected on this Tea Party platform, because their voters will not stand by him. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-855-20-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download it right there at our website. And if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We're right back after this.
Good news, people. America's wages are up. The average worker is making more today than a year ago. You ask? Get ready to be excited. 58 cents a week. Of course, averages don't tell the whole story. Economist John Kenneth Galbraith graphically explained the problem of averages with a story about a 6-foot-tall man who drowned when wading across a stream with an average depth of 3 feet. Similarly, while average workers are trying to decide how to spend those extra 5 and nickel and 3 pennies they're getting each week, your average CEO is wallowing in an extra $860,000 this year over last. That's just the increase in their bonuses. It does not include their multimillion-dollar salaries, which are also up, nor their golden pensions, free health care, limousines, corporate jets, etc. And, as you might imagine, many corporate chieftains did much better than average in their bonus checks. Take Robert Iger of Walt Disney, Inc. He pocketed a bonus of $13.5 million this year, 45% more than he got a year ago. Well, explained his PR agent, bonuses provide incentives for excellent executive performance, and Iger deserves his riches this year because Disney's profits are up by 24%. Swell, but why is his increase double that increase in profits? And by the way, Robert's salary is $2 million a year. Why does he need any extra incentive to do his job? One more question. Does Iger really think that he alone produced Disney's rise in profits? Notice that the animators, performers, and other hard-working employees at Disney World and Disney Studios got no 45% increase in their pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, no one goes to Disney World to see Robert Iger. If he wants bonus money, tell him to put on a Mickey Mouse costume in the wilting heat of Florida summer and earn it. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
I'm breaking rocks in the hot sun. I cross the law and the law on. I cross the law and the law on.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Republican presidential hopeful Tim Pawlenty is kind of in the news. He's going to hold his first major fundraiser to get that exploratory committee up off the ground. I thought you formed an exploratory committee and then you announced. Not quite sure how he figured this out. Anyway, his big fundraiser is going to take place next month in his home state of Minnesota. The dinner/fundraiser will be held at the International Market Square in Minneapolis on May the 18th. And according to USA Today, it will be quite affordable indeed. That is if you can cough up $1,000 per person. And if you'd like to have your picture taken with the former Minnesota governor, it's only going to cost you $2,500 for the VIP photo reception, you know, right before the rubber chicken and cold buttered and soaked green beans. You know, because you go to these events and it's all the same stuff. It's all the rubber chicken or the half-cooked roast beef. And it's always cold. But for $1,000 a head, it better be something. It better be something. I'll tell you that. But this shutdown thing just kind of has got me by the. On one hand, I think it could be a good thing to, you know, kind of sit the Tea Party down, but on another hand, it's going to mean a lot of pain for people. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Preston on line one. How are we doing tonight, Preston?
I'm doing well, thank you. I wanted to let you know that I don't know if you have a satellite TV where you're at. You're in Harrisburg, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm in Denver, and I have one of the satellite TV channels, and they've got a people-funded progressive network called Link TV.
Yep.
And, yeah, you're familiar with it. Great. And last night they aired a documentary called The Billionaire's Tea Party. And it really goes into this documentary filmmaker got access to all kinds of meetings with activists for the Tea Party machine and where the funding is coming from. And it highlighted the role of Americans for Prosperity.
And the Koch brothers, yeah, I'd love to see that. I'm sure they'll play it again soon. I love Link TV, one of the five stations that I actually do watch along with C-SPAN.
Me too. I often enjoy book TV on C-SPAN.
Yeah, I got to watch some of the I got to watch Phyllis Schlafly the other night tell me how the feminist movement didn't give rights to any women. It was capitalism that gave all the rights to women.
I actually caught part of that, and I could only stomach a bit. But, you know, it's interesting to at least know their arguments and totally disagree, and I think a lot of it's very deceitful, but it's good to know what they're up to. And they air a lot of right-wing stuff on C-SPAN. I think it's a little right-wing and centrist-heavy. But they do some of the most progressive stuff imaginable, too. I remember this one author wrote a book called, I think, State of the Unions.
Yep.
Excellent.
That was Philip Dying.
That's right.
So let me ask you, Preston, what do you think of this, the possibility of a shutdown? Nothing happens at 10:30 tonight. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I think we're just being toyed with in many ways. And, you know, the narratives that are embedded in this discussion, too, I think you really touched on an important one thing about the aversion to taxes. You know, it's constantly we're in debt, we're broke, got to cut, instead of addressing taxes. And how they control the narrative around that, I think, well, it can be overcome, I think, but I think it is slowly. Robert Reich recently came out in favor of taxing the rich. And it's spreading. So,
yeah, and Joseph Stiglitz, the same thing. He came out, he wrote a great piece over at Vanity Fair of Foreign by the 1%. And that's really what the country has turned into. We have given away all of our wealth to the very top. When you consider 400 people control 60% of the wealth in this country, that to me is scary.
And it's such a bizarre discussion as also because a lot of these right-wing, allegedly anti-tax, anti-big government people have careers. Very much with the government, maybe at Lockheed Martin or, you know, the military industrial complex, a prison complex. Maybe they work with ICE or the DEA. So it's like particular forms of government they're okay with, the authoritarian sort.
Locking people up and taking people's rights away. Yeah, I can see that.
Versus, you know, the more social spending oriented.
Yeah, like
constructive.
Building roads and schools and hospitals.
Rec centers, libraries. National parks. They're going after our national parks. Who are the anti-Americans here? These corporatists are going after our national parks at this point.
Well, they want to privatize. There's profit to be made there. We can't make a widget anymore. All the jobs have left. So what are the criminals on Wall Street going to profit from?
Right. You know, as sad as, and there's a lot of negative stuff going on for sure, but I also wanted to let you know that we've been having great rallies out here in Denver. We had a wonderful one on Monday at our city park, several hundred people.
Excellent.
And also, you know, there's in addition to bad trends like outsourcing of so many jobs, have you noticed there's some insourcing going on that might have a constructive role? For instance, Colorado has a couple factories making wind turbines, and they're from, I think, Denmark.
Yeah, I mean, we've got one here. We've got a company called Gamesa.
Okay.
They're a foreign company, but they've set up in a plant here. And, you know, to be honest, and don't take this the wrong way, but the people of Denmark and the people of Germany, when those plants come here to build, they think we're stealing their jobs, much like we think the Chinese are stealing our jobs, because our standard of living is so much less than theirs.
You know, there are jobs for everyone to go around. I was wondering, would you happen to know if they bring their benefit package from Europe? And
no, they do not.
Why do you think
BMW put their plant in Tennessee?
Right.
Why do you think that all of these foreign automakers move to the southern right to work states? So they don't have to pay the higher wages. They don't have to pay the benefits.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about Vestas here in Colorado. I don't know. I should look more into it.
But I would love to hear what you come up with, Preston.
Yeah, I'll let you know for sure.
I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for everything.
Thank you.
Rick.
Thanks so much.
Oh, and thank you for the Planned Parenthood interview. Excellent.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, I mean, you look at this, and as I said, you know, I've talked to some folks who said, yeah, the Germans and people in Denmark think we're stealing their jobs because we're willing to work for much less than they are. And talking about working for much less, you look at the fact that Tom Corporate came out, his little piece that somehow got leaked, who knows how. Was it that the Tom Corporate's people did it on purpose? But they want to slash pay by 4% for state workers. And what I found interesting in the Pittsburgh Tribune article is that the average employee that's represented by the union makes $34,000 a year. That 4% cut would take them down to 32%, down to 32 grand a year. It would save, they're saying it's going to save the state $60 million. Okay? About 1.5% of the deficit. $60 million. So I look at the fact that our lieutenant governor, who looks a lot like Mr. Bean, and a group of Republican legislators have unveiled this welfare check, big cardboard welfare check, to the drilling industry, basically almost a $50 million handout in what they're calling Marcellus Works. And the idea here, and look, if we weren't talking about slashing people's wages, if we weren't talking about slashing $1 billion from education and 56% from higher education, I'd be on board with this. But their Marcellus Shill, their Marcellus Works program, what they're going to do is they're going to set up a way for infrastructure to be built with taxpayer money, almost $50 million. We're going to support their industry. We're going to give them a whole bunch of infrastructure in the hopes that they're going to create more jobs. And I'm going, wait a second. I'm sorry. You're cutting money from workers to hand to the corporations? I got a real problem with this, Jake. I got a real problem with stealing from the poor and giving to the rich. I'm sorry. I just got a problem with it.
And we were told Marcellus Shale was going to create all these jobs. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Doesn't make a lot of sense now. Mr. Corporate, slip of the tongue, but very apropos, says he wants to bring the headquarters here to Pennsylvania. Well, I don't think we have a very good chance of that happening. I think that's just cover for him not giving out these no tax pledges to this industry.
So what they want to do, and I'm in favor. I got a good idea. I think it's not a bad idea. I just don't think it should be with taxpayers' money when we're talking about these massive cuts in programs for you and me. I don't think they need it. I think they're already getting a big enough handout by not having to pay any tax on it. But evidently there are six of these refueling stations for the public to put natural gas in their cars. And there are 15 private stations for, you know, buses and for who knows. So the state, I guess, has about 110,000 natural gas cars. And I guess that's about nationwide, 110,000. But they've got a number of natural gas cars. This is a whole transformation over to natural gas. So we're funding the transformation, which I'm not opposed to. Ideologically, I think it's a good idea to move in that direction and to help an industry, just not do it for them. Sorry, if we're free market people like the Republicans keep telling us they are, maybe the free market should take it that way instead of my tax dollars that you're stealing from the working people. And that's the kicker for me. The fact that they're talking about people who are making $34,000 a year stealing from them to give to a multi-billion dollar industry and down the road a multi-trillion dollar industry just seems to me to be, well, very Republican.
Well, the irony is, Rick, I just about 2 days ago I saw on PCN, they had a press conference, and there was a spokesman from the industry talking about the situation with cars being fueled by natural gas. He claims that we're like 26th in the world, and what he was basically saying, you know, there's a huge market and potential market in the United States. Why would they need incentives? The market is there, and now a perfect scenario for them. The nuclear industry has been hurt, so basically there's not going to be any more new nuclear plants built. So where do we look for energy? It's either coal, natural gas, and of the two, natural gas is cleaner.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with Brian Miller from United for a Fair Economy, right back after this.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Author Naomi Klein has a great quote. What this fight is really about is not about unions or taxpayers. It's a fight about who is going to pay for the crisis that's been created by the wealthiest elite in this country. Is it going to be the regular people, the regular working people, or is it going to be the people who created this crisis? And look, that's what it comes down to. All of these fights that they're having, it's taking from us so that they can continue. I'll get it out yet to give to the top 1%. And I go back to that lame duck session after the November election where they gave away almost $70 billion to the very top wealthy people in the country. And now they're talking about cutting $61 billion from you and me. I want to talk about redistribution of wealth. There it is right there. Anyway, I saw this great campaign. The folks at United for a Fair Economy are taking on the Tax Wealth Like Work campaign. And I think it's a great idea. That's why I've asked Brian Miller from United for a Fair Economy to come talk to us. Again, their website, faireconomy.org. There's a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Brian, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, glad to be on the program.
I think it's a great idea. We should be taxing wealth like work. I think it's obscene that a guy who swings a hammer or breaks his back working on a garbage truck pays higher taxes than a guy sitting on his yacht collecting dividend checks.
That's exactly right. And, we're really excited to have this campaign. And, we've been gearing up for this campaign for a while. And then, of course, just on Wednesday of this week, the letter was circulated from the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which outlined their platform and sort of their response to Ryan's roadmap to ruin. And they've got a progressive alternative they're putting together, which includes taxing capital gains and dividends at the same level as ordinary income, along with a lot of other things that we like, such as a progressive, a graduated estate tax, a millionaire's tax, and some other really good measures that they're putting together. They should be, last I heard, they're coming out the press conference next week to really push this alternative, the progressive alternative to Ryan's roadmap to ruin. And we're really excited. And so our campaign is hitting the ground right in time, just in time. And so over the next week, we have a lot of high wealth folks who've signed on to this, who basically said, look, I make $2 million a year. I pay 15% taxes. That's crazy.
Yep.
And they're signing on saying they're willing, they should pay more. And so we've been able to generate a lot of support for this, not only from working class people, but from high wealth allies who are standing in solidarity with us on this campaign.
Let's examine that for a second, because I think it's important for folks to understand. Earlier on in the program, I said we've been trained in the working class to have this visceral anti-tax, this reaction like a Pavlovian dog. I mean, we hear tax and all of a sudden we start to foam at the mouth. But I always say, well, who are we talking about taxing? I think some of the wealthy, Warren Buffett being one of them, realizes that unless you have a stable country, a stable economy, where there's some wealth being spread around, they can't exist because they can't build fences high enough in the event, well, look at the French Revolution.
Exactly. And, you know, even if you take that aspect out of it, and that's a very real aspect, and Robert Reich has made this argument very well before, is that, you know, if you don't have a strong middle class, you can't have successful businesses because somebody out there's got to have the capacity to buy the stuff we're producing. It goes back to the sort of Henry Ford's model for business development. He believed in paying his workers enough that they could buy the products that they're making. You know, and we need to return to that kind of a value system that says, you know, for our economy to prosper, we have to have a strong middle class. We cannot be a nation of a small group of extremely wealthy and a whole bunch of folks whose wages are flatlining. That's not a road for prosperity for a nation, or for a world, for that matter. You know.
But doesn't that really lead to the two very different worldviews that each of our political parties seem to hold? You have the Republicans who believe that if we stuff the very wealthy's pockets full enough that eventually something has to spill out that we can all fight over. Or the Democrats' view that if we have, you know, strong unions who demand better wages and benefits and have a strong growing middle class, that you'll have mass consumption, which will then create wealth so the wealthy can stuff their pockets until something falls out. To me, those are the two competing worldviews.
Yeah, and there's a certain element of that, but I think you're absolutely right. And that's a very short way to look at it, a shorthand way to describe it, and I think it's a good description. But I think history has proven that the progressive alternative is the far more successful alternative. Because if you look at the period of the 40s, 50s, and 60s in this country, when we had very strong unions, when we had, strong unions, when we had income tax rates of 80 to 90% on the top end.
Yeah, 92% in 1953.
Right. I mean, you know, we had an extremely progressive tax system. We had strong unions. We had a lot of worker safety protections that were put in place. We had a minimum wage that actually meant something. And during this time, we had one of the most robust periods of economic growth this nation has ever seen. Not one of the most robust period of economic growth this nation has ever seen. And not only was it strong growth, it grew across the board. Every income group experienced over 100% increase in their income from like 47 to 77, you know. And then you flash forward, move forward to the time since Reagan, right?
Yep.
Or really the late 70s, actually. In fairness, it actually started in the mid-late
70s. The whole neoliberal move of the late 70s, deregulation, which a lot of it happened under Carter, you're right. But it really went pedal to the metal during the Reagan years.
Yeah, that's when they turbocharged it. And then, you know, then you had deregulation, you had tax breaks for the rich, you had the firing of the PATCO workers, you had assaults on unions. And what we've seen over this last 30 years since that system has come into place is that the economy has grown at a much, much, much slower speed. It's a fraction of the rate. I think in the last like 30 years, you've had like maybe the economy grew about one-fifth as fast as it did the 30 years prior. And what growth there was went almost entirely to the very top 5% or so, while the vast majority of Americans have had their incomes stagnant or flatlining. And so what we've seen, I mean, and so the evidence is on our side. History is on our side. It proves our case. And so what we're looking at now is we're really looking at, I think there's some hopeful signs here, which is that the Republicans have really been overreaching.
Oh, absolutely.
You look at Wisconsin, and you look at the tremendous overreach that took place there. You saw the huge crowds that turned out.
We were there.
It's still going on. They're doing the recalls are going on. And, you know, we may very well see, if we do our organizing right, if the progressives get together, a backlash that will start defining the 2012 election. You know, if you get a few of those Wisconsin senators recalled this year, and then maybe even Walker recalled next year, early next year, that's going to set the tone for the 2012 debates. And it's going to be, you know, you guys went way too far, and the pendulum needs to come back the other way.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that kind of mobilization across the country, though. Later on in the program, we're going to talk to the president of the Washington AFL-CIO. They're having rallies out there in Olympia, Washington, about the massive budget cuts that they're proposing to education, just like here in Pennsylvania, $1 billion cut from K-12, 56% cut from higher education. All of this stuff suffering and harming the middle class and the working class. I look to Jan Schakowsky's Fairness and Taxation Act. Could this be the answer? You know, you look at the fact that the numbers just came out, the 25 top hedge fund managers on Wall Street made $850 million apiece last year, $1 billion apiece the year before, and paid 15% tax.
Exactly. And that case takes us back to the Wealth versus Work campaign. I'm glad you mentioned Schakowsky's bill, because one of the things her bill does, in addition to creating these new tax breaks for millionaires starting, you know, at I think 45%, excuse me,
yep,
at $1 million up to 49% for the handful of Americans that actually make $1 billion a year or more, which, by the way, is more than the average American earns in 20,000 life years, excuse me. The average American earns that in about 20,000 years. That's what these hedge fund managers make in one.
Nice. You know, but here's the thing, you know, and let me frame it the way the right would frame it. They earned it. They deserve it. Why do you want to steal half of it from them?
You can make a moral argument that they work 20,000 times harder than the average American, maybe. But you and I both know that's not the case. I mean, you know, a lot of this is what really the result of ownership. That's what this boils down to. This boils down to who owns this country. We're becoming a nation where wealth is so extremely concentrated at the top. And those who own, when you hear all the Dow Jones and you hear everyone talking about, oh, look, the Dow Jones is up, it's back to pre-recession levels now. Yeah, well, that's fine for the folks who own this country.
Right.
But for the folks who work in this country, unemployment is still pushing right up against the double-digit range and still, you know, very, very high. And if you count all the folks who aren't even looking for work anymore because they've just thrown up their hands, you know, it's probably closer to 20%.
Yeah. One of the things I've always said is one of the greatest con jobs ever done in this country was convincing working class people that they had an interest in the Dow and in Wall Street and how the stocks were going, because they gave us these tools called 401ks, which I don't know about yours, but after the Bush recession, my 401k became a 200.5 because it got cut in half.
Exactly. And that's part of the reason, that's part of the rationale for their desire in the past and continued desire to privatize Social Security. They want all Americans to be obsessed with the Dow Jones. Even if we had all that going on, the reality is, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I should, you know, the overwhelming share, I think it's like 50% of the nation's wealth is owned by the top 1%. And so, you know, when you look at disparities like that, sure, yeah, if we all get obsessed about tracking the Dow, well, that's going to basically enrich a very small group of people at the very, very, very top.
Yeah, the people who are already doing really well.
Right. And, again, back to the core of our tax wealth like work campaign, and who are paying 15% tax, top tax rate on their income from those investments. And that, you know, going back to the tax wealth like work, what this campaign is basically about is that if you go out there and you work for a living, and, you know, let's be honest, to pay that top 35% rate, you got to be making a lot of money. So you're probably a doctor, a lawyer, or something like that, right? You know, or whatever. Or even if you're paying the 33%, maybe you make $150,000, you're paying the 33% rate, right, top rate. That's what you pay for work. If you make that exact same amount of money sitting on a boat collecting interest on your stock or dividends on your stock or capital gains, you're going to pay 15%.
Right. So let me ask you this. What do you say to the argument on the other side of this that we should lower that 33 or 35% down to 15?
Well, I think we all agree that, well, we don't. Maybe the rest of them don't agree. But I think, you know, one of the things that the folks who've been getting up on our, again, with our tax fairness pledge, we actually have a lot of high wealth people, business leaders and others who are calculating their savings from the tax break on dividends and capital gains and giving that money away to groups that are working to reverse the very same law.
Good for them.
Because they understand that their businesses can't succeed if it isn't for a well-funded education system. Their businesses can't succeed if there aren't, you know, highways to take people to their stores. You know, their businesses can't succeed if there isn't courts to protect their copyrights. I think, you know, we've worked with a lot of these folks, and so there's a really sound argument to be made that, you know, we have this false dichotomy in our country that it is government versus prosperity or government versus business or something. And it's really, you know, government and prosperity, government and business, because they work hand in hand.
Right. Well, you need a boogeyman. They need someone to say, here's the person that you should hate. And the right has done a masterful job of divorcing citizens from their government.
Right. And the reality is government is the vehicle for us to do things that we cannot do on our own. Things that are important. It's a vehicle for pooling resources, and the private sector is not going to provide the kinds of things that government does. It never will. If you look at all, you know, if you look at market principles like education, you know, there is zero incentive for the private private sector to provide education for workers, except for learning how to use proprietary software for their own companies. You know, there's no self-interest in a business educating people deep, providing the kind of critical thinking and deep learning that we need to have an effective citizenry. That's the kind of stuff we have to do as citizens, coming together through our tax system, pooling our resources to provide the kind of education system that fosters critical thinking, not the kind of education system that teaches you how to use McDonald's accounting software.
You want fries with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent, excellent. The new campaign, Tax Wealth Like Work. I'm sure you can get there at faireconomy.org, the United for a Fair Economy website. Brian Miller, I appreciate your time. Great information. I appreciate it.
Glad to be on the program. Anytime.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and far away. Bottle shop, left candy on. Blue dental, head is vain. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. It appears, and there's no formal announcement yet, a couple of emails I got, rick@thericksmithshow.com, have said that there's a couple of different proposals out there, but the deal is basically done. There will be no shutdown, so we will find it. Well, I'm sure before the end of the night we will have confirmation of that. I guess now what we're going to have to get ready for is May, because May to me is the big one. That's going to be the big fight with the Tea Party. And to me, I'm looking at this, the Tea Party is going to be awful angry tomorrow morning when they wake up and realize that, look, the people that they put in there actually did their jobs. They're going to be pretty angry about that. And I'm telling you, I think it's a good thing.
Well, it sounds like the old bulls that have been there for a while, the conservatives, I think said, hey, you know, this isn't the time to, we don't want to die on this hill. This is not the fight that we want to take to the end.
But it looks like 38.5 million or billion in cuts, and the Republicans are not going to go after defunding Planned Parenthood and some of the other riders that went along with it. So it'll be interesting to see when they come out. So we will keep an eye. If you hear anything, again, you can call us 1-888-520-RICK, or you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, so we can get the latest information. But again, May is the big one. The debt ceiling is going to be the big one. And I'm telling you right now, any trying to shut government down and failure to raise that cap will cause us massive pain for generations. This is not just a national thing. It's a global thing if we renege on our agreements. Because you think our debt problems are bad now? Wait till the interest rates skyrocket. And even if it just goes up one tenth of a percent or 1%, that's still a massive, massive amount of money. Anyway, Democrats and labor activists are busy getting their recall petitions done, and they evidently have enough, 24,000 signatures, which is 9,000 more than they need against Senator Randy Hopper of Wisconsin. And, you remember Randy, don't you? Got his name in the paper a couple of times. Turns out Randy wasn't home when all the activists went to his house to kind of complain. According to his wife, he was living somewhere else with his mistress. So she and their housekeeper both signed the recall petition. How very nice. What is that old saying? Hell hath no fury.
His much younger mistress,
25 years old. Hey, good for him if he can get away with it. But you look at Wisconsin and the latest bizarre voting thing happened this week. I'm not sure where this is all going to turn out. I'm not saying that this woman was deliberately engaging in voter fraud, and I'm not really saying she's a complete dunce, but she's got to be one or the other. It's got to be something. Either you're cheating or you're an idiot. So it'll be interesting to see where this whole thing takes us. And it's going to go to court, because you just don't go home with your laptop with voting information all over it and say, oh, gee, I found a whole precinct of 14,000 votes right here on my laptop that I took home and 2 days later decided I found it. Which brings me back to this whole idea of elections. Ever since 2000, our elections have really had major problems. And, you got to kind of wonder what went wrong. Well, what went wrong is you had this whole right-wing push towards doing a whole bunch of tricky stuff. Now, look, they've been trying to do funky things with elections for years. But in the old days, what you had a piece of paper and a pen. You did your ballot, you put it in there. There were some people who stuffed them, I admit that. But at the end of the day, for the most part, you had a piece of paper, you had something to count. There were some shenanigans, but oversight kind of put some of that at bay, right? We've got now are these machines that nobody can see what happens, nobody knows what happens, there's no paper trail, and some woman can go home with 14,000 votes on her laptop that nobody knows existed. And what's amazing to me is nobody said, hey, there's a whole precinct in Crazy Town missing. Because evidently the area that was missing, they're calling Waukesha right now. It's actually Waukesha, famous for the movie with the grumpy old men. They just seemed to lose 14,000 votes until she found them, and now she's a hero. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this AP story, Jake. A central Pennsylvania county, Lancaster, their Board of Elections has taken final action barring reporters from the building where election night ballots are tabulated. It's a move that organizations say would obstruct what should be an open and public process. The plan by Lancaster County election officials approved on Wednesday will move the media across the street from the warehouse building in a business park where votes are counted. So they're across the street. Maybe they get really high-powered binoculars. The media previously was allowed to sit at a table in the corner of the warehouse, though it could not access the office in the warehouse where the votes were counted. Candidates and political party officials would still be allowed inside the election central. The space, they're saying, where the media was allowed to sit before, they're saying now we need supplies for our poll workers. BS.
I think you might have a lawsuit out of that.
Oh, you think? You think the media is not going to go, wait a minute?
And they should.
What happened to transparency?
Openness and transparency we need more of.
What happened to the Fourth
Estate?
What happened to the only protected industry in the nation, the press?
Since 2000, how many people have really maybe given up because they said, look, we can't even trust... We can't even trust the authenticity of elections anymore. And I have reservations about, not reservations. I truly believe that the 2000 presidential election was stolen.
I have all out freaking psychotic reactions over how bad our election cycles have been. I don't trust those machines. And I go back to the first time I voted on one. And I've told this before. Some cute little 20-year-old girl took me over to the machines. And she saw the look on my face of just kind of this reservation. She's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. I go, yeah, I'm sure that's what they said to the people getting on the train going to Auschwitz.
Oh.
But again, you know, here's the problem. She had not a clue what that guy was talking about. Just walked away smiling.
Well, and then for a while, I think you're still around, the Diebold people who have questionable political connections. You know, are providing the software and the machines. way too much conflict of interest.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, for me, I went over to the ATM today to deposit my paycheck. And you know what came out? A piece of paper. And it told me exactly how much money I have in the bank, told me exactly how much I put in. Told me how much I have available based on how many checks I have outstanding, because I pay things on my bill payer. Gave me all this information. It was all right there, nice little piece of paper. I got to put in my pocket, take home. I have a record of the transaction that I made at my bank. Can someone explain to me why my vote is any less important than my checking account? Can anybody explain to me why I can't have a piece of paper spit out to me and say, this is who you voted for, so I can look at it, verify it, and say, yep, that's who I voted for. And then, you know, hey, a great idea is have two pieces of paper come out. One you put in your pocket, say, yeah, that's mine, I'm going to save that. The next one, you drop in a box on the way out the door. Nobody has to see who your piece of paper says. You just dump in the big box. So you know what? What happens? If, by chance, some twit walks home with a computer with 14,000 votes on it, you can go back to that big box that has all those little pieces of paper in it, and you can count them. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? So that, you know what? If the numbers on the computer, which are supposed to be so accurate, and I do trust my bank, I do trust the fact that they're going to do math a little bit better than I am, because I've yet to catch them in a mistake, why don't I have the same accuracy with our voting machines? I've got to tell you, you know, if all the pieces of paper are in the bin and all the votes are in the machine, they should match. There should be some parity there. It should be right there. But why aren't we doing it? Because I can only think that they love this controversy, and they want to make government look as bad as possible. And again, it's about putting people into these positions who don't believe in what they're doing, who despise the institution that they're serving in, and they hate the fact that they have to answer to people. You look at what our legislature here in Pennsylvania is doing right now. They are doing everything they can possibly do to take oversight out of the equation, to take the people out of their government. They're setting up, as we speak, these boards, these transportation boards that are going to take all power of transportation away from the people, going to put it in these little commissions so they can privatize the turnpike, so they can toll 80, they can do all those things that we the people wouldn't allow this commission's going to be able to do. With their voucher bill, they're going to set up another commission to dole out the winning tickets, not accountable to you and me, but more government, more unaccountable government. Then they're going and they're pushing these threshold bills, And this is the other beautiful part of this. No more accountability. So the guy at the local office says, hey, my brother-in-law needs a job. Come on over here and do this job for $24,900 because it's under $25,000. They're stealing your government, and they're, you know, they're leaking on your head and telling you it's raining. We're back after this.
Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin working families rose to the challenge of their first big political ballot box test since Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights began in February. Voters defeated a self-described conservative state Supreme Court justice, but as Jesse Russell reports, that razor-thin victory must still withstand a recount.
Tuesday saw historic spring elections in Wisconsin with both supporters and opponents of Governor Scott Walker on the edge of their seats, waiting for results from what should have been a mundane race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Going into the race after the primary election in February, incumbent Justice David Prosser was a hands-on favorite, having pulled in 55% of the vote over his second-highest leading opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, who only received 25% of the vote. After Walker introduced legislation that would limit collective bargaining rights for state workers, and Prosser indicated he supported Walker's efforts, the race became electrified. With all precincts reporting on Wednesday, Kloppenburg held a 204-vote lead. A recount is likely. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate said the results from Tuesday sent a signal to the state.
Clearly the results from yesterday's election represent a watershed moment for Wisconsin and a Waterloo for Scott Walker.
The energy from Tuesday's election is now expected to be passed on to 8 attempts to recall Senate Republicans who voted with Walker. Stephanie Taylor is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Big victories in target districts like Randy Hopper and Dan Kopanky. It looks like Joanne Kloppenburg took over 55% of the vote in Robert Cole's district and over 55% in Luther Olson's district. So this bodes very, very well for the recall campaigns against the Republican state senators.
America's labor movement says it's deeply disappointed that the Obama administration has signaled it will move in the near future to submit the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement to a vote in Congress. The AFL-CIO says the level of violence in Colombia is still unacceptable for trade unionists and human rights defenders. With the murders of union activists and oppressive conditions facing workers trying to organize there, the AFL says it remains strongly opposed to the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the Labor Federation appreciates the Obama administration's efforts to negotiate a separate action plan to try and address human and labor rights concerns, but that plan doesn't go far enough and doesn't guarantee an end to violence against workers trying to organize in Colombia. 51 trade unionists were murdered in Colombia last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, when we went to Wisconsin, one of the two reasons we went was, one, to be part of what I thought was going to be history, and it was historical, and two, was to bring back the ideas from Wisconsin on what made it great. And I think what made it historic is the fact that people went to their capital and they didn't leave until their voices were heard. And all across the country, we're seeing the same kind of actions going on. Last night we talked with a student from Wisconsin who said, you know, they went to their capital and they camped out. 15,000 Washingtonians took to their capital to have their voice and their anger heard. The same thing that we're going on here, the insane budget cuts, insane cuts to education, higher education. And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm hoping that the kids, once finals are done, they come here to Camp Capital here in Harrisburg with their sleeping bags and camp out here until something is done. Anyway, in Washington, like I said, they took to the Capitol. I want to talk a little bit more about that. Talk about Jeff Johnson, president of the Washington AFL-CIO. Jeff, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Rick.
You know, another action in Wisconsin, in Washington. We're seeing this stuff across the country, Ohio, Michigan, New Hampshire, you know, all across the country. And I think it's great to see people out.
Absolutely, Rick. Yeah, we, you know, what was great about Washington State was we've done six actions over the last 7 days, starting up at the Canadian border last Saturday on the 2nd, and then culminating today in our state capitol, where we had about 15,000 labor and community members out, you know, basically saying enough is enough, tired of being blamed for, you know, for budget deficits. What we really have is a revenue deficit, and we need to close corporate tax loopholes. You know, we got Boeing's our major manufacturer in the state, and they've paid no federal taxes in the last 3 years. They haven't paid any state taxes either. They got an enormous amount of subsidies. And at the same time, we've got a $5 billion deficit, and they're cutting children and working poor off of health care tuition rate. You mentioned students' tuition rates. They just passed a budget that has tuition rates going up 22% at the universities and state colleges, and 20% at the community and technical colleges. Enough is enough.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, to me, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, this had to come somewhere. It seems like a blueprint that every one of these rightward leaning legislatures and in our case, our governors, are putting out there as the answer when, as you've said, and I've been saying this from the beginning, we have a revenue problem. We do not have a spending problem.
There you go. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we have 11 freshman Democrats that, are introducing a bill tomorrow that would close a tax loophole for interstate banks, Bank of America, Chase Manhattan Bank, you know, which pulls about $100 billion out of our state every year. You know, if we could just close that one loophole, you know, we wouldn't have to raise tuition by 20% next year for students. We did some interesting stuff this week. We occupied the Capitol building for two nights. You know, today we left. It was great, Rick. We had the firefighters, pipe and drum corps, and after we did our big rally outside, we brought as many of the 15,000 into the Capitol Dome as we could, marching behind the pipe and drum corps, the firefighters. We did a side-to-side call and response with the last big, "We're watching you, we'll be back, we're watching you, we'll be back," and we kind of left that message with them. What we're doing over the weekend, all the organizations that participated, is we're assessing kind of what our capacity is to come back, you know, what type of actions do we need to escalate even further, and then we have a meeting of principals on Monday to figure out next steps.
That sounds great. I remember when we were in Wisconsin, when the firefighters with the bagpipes came in, and what kind of a moment that was.
Wasn't that something? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin was amazing in the fact that you had the sustained long, it was a long occupation, if you will. Those kids, you know, they looked at the same things that I'm telling people here. These budget cuts are real. They're going to be harmful, not just today, but for 20 years down the road, because we're not going to be educating the working people of this country, and we're not going to get them the opportunity that I think they one, need and most and deserve.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the budget decisions they're making, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. You're absolutely right. I mean, we should be trying to invest our way out of this recession and slow recovery, you know, investing in the schools, you know, making sure that people have decent health care, which provides great jobs for folks, you know, building that social and physical infrastructure. And, you know, it's even in our state where we've got a Democratic governor and a Democratic House and Senate, you know, they're just kind of fallen prey to this right-wing mantra of, you know, well, there's nothing we can do about it. And, you know, it's as if, you know, poor people, children and the elderly are using too much health care, and that's why costs are so high, right? You know, so they want to blame the victim. It's just not right.
Yeah, and to me, it comes back down to, we've got to keep getting the message out there and educating people, because I think all of these attacks, whether it's on labor or on students, these are opportunities for us to reach out, organize, and come together. And as the Week of Actions said, we are one in all of this.
That's right. No, absolutely. And it was great. I had two middle school students speaking today, one on education, one on healthcare, talking about how the budget cuts are going to impact them. You know, these are 12 and 13-year-olds. I mean, it was a beautiful, beautiful sight. We had lots and lots and lots of young people there, and they are ready to bring their sleeping bags and come back to the Capitol. And, we did a little bit of nonviolent civil disobedience. So 15 folks got arrested. And that was fine. And now we're just trying to figure out how do we up the ante? How do we get these Democrats to have kind of a moral background and backbone and understand that the budget is a moral document, right?
Absolutely.
Well,
I mean, and you guys are in a little bit better position than we are here in Pennsylvania. Here in this state, they have overwhelming majorities in the House, Senate, and of course control the governor's mansion. So, it's not a matter of reaching out to Democrats. It's a matter of finding some sane Republicans.
Rick, I'm sorry. If there's any way we can help you, we will.
maybe you can help us move out that way where we might have a shot. But in looking at this, the 2010 election was about jobs. At least that's what we were told. It's about jobs, jobs, jobs. But none of this stuff creates any jobs. None of this stuff helps us get out of the trouble we're in. In fact, I think all of this slash and burn mentality is actually going to cost us jobs and going to put us back into a recession.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, every type of social spending that people want to do that would actually create jobs and take care of the needs of people, the Republicans, the business folks, associations claim that those are job-killing bills. They got this simple, two-phrase mantra, everything's a job killer, when in fact, what they're doing are killing jobs. They're giving more and more tax incentives away. So you get the contradiction. You got the Washington Business Roundtable, all the big guys, right? And they have their list of priorities, invest in education, higher education, invest in roads and so on and so forth. But none of them are paying any taxes, right? So, they're saying to the middle class and the poor, you pay the taxes. And oh, by the way, we're going to cut your health care at the same time.
Let me ask you a last question. This is kind of a blind side, if you don't mind. I'm polling my labor leader friends on President Obama came out this week and said they're going to pursue Colombia. They said earlier going to go after South Korea free trade agreement. Now Colombia, and I'm sure Panama is not far behind. I'm curious your reaction.
This is crazy. The Democrats have to stand up strong against these trade agreements unless they put real labor, real environmental, and real kind of sovereignty standards into these agreements. We're just shooting ourselves in the foot. I mean, between our tax code and our trade policies, we have virtually deindustrialized our whole country. This is just craziness. Somehow we've got to get through to President Obama that it's time to do these trade pacts right, both for the protection of foreign workers as well as our own.
But, here's my thing. What I think's happened is he's taken this business-friendly mentality somehow by surrounding himself with a bunch of business-friendly people. This idea of, being business-friendly. What could be more business-friendly than taking people like you up in a plane and throwing you out?
No, you're absolutely right. When he appointed Jeffrey Immelt, from General Electric to be, his new advisor, it's like, how much further in the pockets of the corporations could he be? I mean, he should have appointed Paul Krugman or, Joe Stiglitz.
Absolutely.
Right? But he didn't. And it's a real disappointment. So we got a contradiction on our hands. Somehow, we've got to rally our troops around, getting him reelected. At the same time, he's not respecting the, basic, fundamental principles that the working class and the middle class need. So, this is
going to
be hard.
Yeah, I hear you. Jeff, I appreciate your time. Thank you for taking a little time talking to us. I appreciate the work you guys are doing out there as well.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it, Rick. Thank you.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It was rock and roll.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Good news, people. America's wages are up. The average worker is making more today than a year ago. How much more, you ask? Get ready to be excited. 58 cents a week. Of course, averages don't tell the whole story. Economist John Kenneth Galbraith graphically explained the problem of averages with a story about a 6-foot-tall man who drowned when wading across a stream with an average depth of 3 feet. Similarly, while average workers are trying to decide how to spend those extra 5 dimes, a nickel, and 3 pennies they're getting each week, your average CEO is wallowing in an extra $860,000 this year over last. That's just the increase in their bonuses. It does not include their multimillion-dollar salaries, which are also up, nor their golden pensions, free health care, limousines, corporate jets, etc. And, as you might imagine, many corporate chieftains did much better than average in their bonus checks. Take Robert Iger of Walt Disney, Inc. He pocketed a bonus of $13.5 million this year, 45% more than he got a year ago. Well, explained his PR agent, bonuses provide incentives for excellent executive performance, and Iger deserves his riches this year because Disney's profits are up by 24%. Swell, but why is his increase double that increase in profits? And by the way, Robert's salary is $2 million a year. Why does he need any extra incentive to do his job? One more question. Does Iger really think that he alone produced Disney's rise in profits? Notice that the animators, farmers, and other hard-working employees at Disney World and Disney Studios got no 45% increase in their pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, no one goes to Disney World to see Robert Iger. If he wants bonus money, tell him to put on a Mickey Mouse costume in the wilting heat of Florida summer and earn it. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Our tweet of the day comes from Governor O'Malley. If the Tea Party Republican Congress thinks a government shutdown is good for a nation's economy, they should visit Somalia. Interesting thought. Anyway, to find out what's going on in Washington, our friends from Talk Radio News Service, Bob Ney, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, I think I've got the inside scoop, at least from some of my friends up on the Hill. But I think that the likelihood of this shutdown is actually diminishing. And the staff of Speaker Boehner and Harry Reid are starting to put together some temporary language. I think that's kind of an indicator. What I think is going to be in it is going to be about $39 billion in cuts from the previous 2010 budget, about $514 billion in spending for the defense budget, and that would take care of the rest of the remaining year. Now, they're going to take care of the EPA problem and the Planned Parenthood, probably, Rick, by doing either a study, which is always good for Congress to do, of the title monies, or they may actually just have a separate vote. So they're fast and furious. Harry Reid, also the Democratic leader of the Senate, said he's going to speak at 9 o'clock tonight on the floor of the Senate instead of 8. All these indicators tell me they'll have something that will temporarily carry them for about 6 months with a gentleman's agreement on proposed cuts.
Yeah, you were in Congress in 95, were you not?
Yes, when the shutdown happened, I sure was.
How does this compare?
A little bit different in the sense that they've got the Tea Party breathing down John Boehner's neck. We didn't have, a force on the Republican side like the Tea Party. We also had Bill Clinton, and frankly, trying to, maneuver around Bill Clinton is not easy. And I like Barack Obama, but Bill Clinton's a little bit tougher, frankly, seriously, to deal with. He's a little bit smoother, in a sense. But I think also we had Bob Dole, who really didn't like the idea at all. And that was the blink that occurred. This time they got Harry Reid, who is opposed to the idea. So there's a little bit more, I think, different dynamics in it, in the whole measure. But Boehner, has to try to satisfy the Tea Party people. They probably will come out furious with him. But,
I was going to ask, how's the Tea Party going to look at this? Because Boehner has said there's no room between him and the Tea Party. And most of my Tea Party friends, most of the people I know, they want this shut down in the worst way.
Yeah, they've already called for a possible primary on John Boehner. Now, I'm not saying that he would lose a primary, but that's not a good thing, being Speaker of the House and having somebody breathing down your neck. You know, you've got to face that fact. So John Boehner's, I think he's going to come out of this, and I don't think the Tea Party people, frankly, are going to be very happy with him.
Well, what happens if you're wrong and we don't get this agreement?
Well, if we don't get the agreement, already the military pay this morning was cut in half. Soldiers were on their way on the airplanes. Their pay was cut in half to the families. If we don't get the agreement, the government shuts down. Going to be a lot of press stories on things that aren't working right, Homeland Security, airport delays, you know, you name it, it'll be out there. I predict you, though, 30-some percent of the people will be mad at the Republicans, 30-some percent of the people will be mad at the Democrats, and the rest will be mad at everybody. So I don't think there's a clear winner politically, but if it shuts down, they'll have to come to terms. If it shuts down, they cannot continue this for a two-week period. I guarantee you that.
Now, what else is going on in Washington tonight?
Well, there is one other thing to mention, too. This kind of got lost in the whole shuffle today, but the Republicans have called for an Internal Revenue Service probe of the AARP. Pretty bold move, frankly,
wow.
Really. Wally Herger is a Republican from California, Dave Reichert, a Republican from Washington, and a Republican from Louisiana, and they say there needs to be a probe of the IRS by the towards the AARP. And again, that seems to be, I think, a pretty bold move to take the take them on. One other thing is New Hampshire is going to factor in pretty, I think, significantly when the presidential primaries come up, of how this whole budget process with the baby boomers and Medicare is going to play out. And I think some of those Republican candidates will be on a pretty particular hot seat. And as candidates, it's going to be interesting to see how they react to all this.
Yeah, I'm interested myself. You know, as a former Republican congressman, mm-hmm. You know, and looking at Paul Ryan's, what I'm seeing as a destruction of Medicare down the road, I'm curious what your thought what is on
block, that. Block grants are, in my personal opinion, block grants are a horrible idea. Because you give the state a block grant, you give X amount of money, the state has to squeeze, you've got 50 different programs in 50 different states for Medicare. It's not going to be an even program across the board. I'm all for flexibility of local government, but this may not be a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's not a good thing.
Bob Nay, Talk Radio News Service, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All righty. And now to find out what's going on here in Harrisburg, what do you got for us?
Yeah, there's an article, Rick, in the paper about Bob Casey. And he's one of the good guys. I've always liked Bob Casey, and you can depend on Bob when there's a crisis to do the right thing. With the shutdown of the federal government incoming, Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey is working on a bill that would ensure members of the military are paid, even if Uncle Sam is closed for business. Pennsylvania Democratic Senator said he and Senator Bailey Hutchinson from Texas, a Republican, hope to have the bill on the Senate floor before the midnight deadline to keep the government open. Senator Pat Toomey, the other senator from Pennsylvania, has also signed on as co-sponsor of the bill. I think people of goodwill on both sides of the aisle are going to work to make sure that happens, said Casey. We want to have it done so that in the event of a shutdown, military families won't pay a more extraordinary price than they already are.
Casey, well, you don't have to worry about it now. A deal has been reached.
I understand that.
So we're evidently $78.5 billion below the president's 2011 budget proposal. They have moved.
Beautiful. If I can say one thing, and this, I know there's no deal, but I think we went right into this scenario not far down the road. I like this provision. In addition to the military pay bill, Casey said he hopes the House of Representatives will pass his bill that would prevent lawmakers from getting paid during any shutdown. That Senate has approved the measure. Toomey has also pledged not to accept his salary in the event of a shutdown. I think that's a good idea. If you're going to shut down government, you shouldn't be getting your pay, especially if you're one of the people who were responsible for that shutdown. So that's good news. There seems to be a little animosity between the Corbett administration and some of the federal oversight organization commissions. The head of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency said she tried to call the governor of Pennsylvania about his administration's regulation of the natural gas drilling in the Marcellus Shale, and he didn't return the call. Can you imagine that? The governor's office said that it was just, it's just gas. It never happened. And a spokesman for the governor said that Corbett would be happy to speak with the EPA administrator, Lisa Johnson. That he said, she said over a phone, might seem trivial, but it highlights a tension between state and federal regulators over how development of the Marcellus Shale is regulated. March 23rd, Corbett Department of Environmental Protections issued an email edict to staffers. No environmental violations against drillers could be issued without the personal approval of DEP Secretary Michael Kranzer. Jackson learned of it before the media did during a visit to the Pennsylvania field office. She tried to call the governor, she said, but never got a call back. I did reach out to the governor, Jackson told Philadelphia radio station WHYY on Monday. I never did hear from him. Corbett's administration has made at least two decisions that had the EPA attention. In addition to the edict requiring approval from the top for any kind of or all of Marcellus Shale violations, the administration rescinded a provision that would aggregate the air emissions of drilling operations for regulations of air pollution rather than treating each site individually. Jackson told WHYY Monday that cumulative emissions from oil and gas drilling have surprised many federal regulators who were caught off guard when they learned that ozone levels in rural Wyoming were as bad on some days as Los Angeles. She said the EPA will release new proposals for governing air emissions from oil and gas drilling within several months. Hopefully we can rely on the state to regulate these things and we can provide technical support most of the time. No state at this point can afford to look the other way. I would encourage the state of Pennsylvania to be aggressively overseeing and looking at air and, of course, water impacts. Unlike most big gas states, and this is important, Pennsylvania allows partially treated drilling wastewater to be discharged into rivers from which communities draw working water, drinking water. That is indeed troubling. And it's good to know that the EPA at least has their eye on this. Jane Orie, the last couple of weeks there's been several developments. She's under the gun for corruption charges. And there was a trial, and it was declared a mistrial. And now there, behind the scenes, there's some more things happening in this trial, which I think are very interesting. Representing State Senator Jane Orie should not be retried on public corruption charges because doing so would constitute double jeopardy, according to her lawyer, who filed an appeal today. Orie is scheduled to be retried Monday on conflict of interest and other public corruption charges, alleging that she used her legislative staff to do campaign work for her and her sister, State Supreme Court Justice Jane Marie Melvin. Allegheny County Judge Jeffrey Manning declared a mistrial March 3rd while jurors were deliberating on her first trial. The mistrial came after prosecutors pointed out that two defense documents used to discredit a key witness were likely forgeries. That has prompted the Allegheny County District Attorney Office to begin investigating more than two dozen other defense exhibits to see if they were also fraudulent. One last story, Rick. I know you had covered it a little bit, but there's in that story out in Wisconsin where mysteriously about over 7,000 votes for the Republican showed up. There's an article that I think we ought to take a look at. Political bombshell in Wisconsin, a Republican election official in a Republican stronghold suddenly finds thousands of new votes stored in her personal computer. Basically what she did, she, in spite of recommendations from the county, Rick, would not tie into the county system. So she did her own thing. Not only did she do her own thing, the recommendation was for her to give the same key to get into her computer, her own personal computer, which she used. The county advised her to give the same key to get into that computer to each one of her assistants, and she has decided not to do that and to give each one a separate. So you wonder why. You wonder why we have problems in our in our election process. She was keeping those records on her own computer. She's also been under suspicion before in other elections where there's some improprieties, and I'm sure there's going to be, at the very least, the Democrat is going to bring people in there to investigate that situation. It just does not pass the smell test, Rick.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. Going to talk a little bit about the deal. Is it done? And how's the vote going to go? Back after this.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might do another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliance Repairs.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So evidently, they have an agreement. The President, Boehner, and Reid have all come to some working agreement. So we're not going to have to worry about 800,000 government employees not being at work on Monday. We're not going to have to worry about all of the horrors right now that could come of this. Let's see if it passes. You know, just because the leader has spoken doesn't necessarily mean that the Tea Party and the Republican majority in the House is going to go along with it. I'm sure it will, but it'll be interesting to see. And I think, you know, we're going to find out, we're going to see this week coming up the blowback, because I think the Tea Party, I think they were all just tingly in the panties and excited about having impose their will, which is this kind of pain.
Well, I would imagine that Boehner, before he agreed to it, was counting heads. I mean, think about it. If they have a vote and he's totally embarrassed, that's not good for his political career.
Evidently, Caterpillar announced today a joint venture with a Chinese transmission manufacturer to build drivetrain systems and other components for Caterpillar's machinery. and a production line of automatic transmissions for highway travel there in China. Caterpillar says it's looking to expand its range of products in China and would be a 45% stakeholder in the venture. Evidently, Caterpillar now employs 8,000 people in China. And, you know, last week we talked a little bit about, Caterpillar was all just tingly with the prospect of opening up Colombia. Stop and think about this, folks. More of these insane trade deals. Caterpillar's already setting themselves up to do the production in China, sell it from there. Bring it back here. I mean, this is the thing that I love about how bizarre our trade policies are. They're going to be able to build it in China, bring it back here, slap something on a sticker or something, and then they'll be able to have the free trade with Colombia or with South Korea or Panama. You got to give them credit. These corporate criminals, they really know how to game a system. They really know how to play the game. And it frustrates me on so many levels that we've got leaders of both parties who are incapable, unwilling, or just plain ignorant about the fact that, you know what, you're destroying this country by encouraging companies like Caterpillar, who used to pay very good wages. It's amazing stuff to me. And, you know, I heard this county commissioner candidate, and, you know, they all have these anecdotal stories. I knew a guy. You hear this all the time. I knew a guy. And he used to make $150 an hour working for Caterpillar. And he went on strike because it wasn't enough. Which is ridiculous. but it makes a nice story. Like, I was in the checkout line. And there was a woman paying with food stamps, buying cigarettes and beer. And she was, you know, buying all this stuff that she wasn't supposed to.
And tasty cakes.
Yeah, lots of tasty candy.
Yeah.
And you go, really? Well, no. It's like I tell people, they say, well, I know, you know, this person, they cheat welfare, or they cheat. And I said, really? Wow, I got my phone. Let's call and let's report them. I've got the number on my phone. Let's call and report them. Oh, we don't want to do that. But it's all these anecdotal stories that I find quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, again, I'm anxious to see what the details on this. We haven't seen quite yet, but again, the shutdown has been averted, evidently, and we will move forward and go from there. Just amazing. I'm looking at some of the numbers right now, and some of the numbers are saying that the Democrats really, really gave in. Wow.
On some programs that were near and dear to the average Democrat out there in the public, yes.
Wow.
That's why the Republicans really had no complaints. They actually came out. They got more of what they wanted than the Democrats did. Let's be honest.
I'm just locked on it. I look at this and I go, really? I mean, is this what we're what we've given up? Is this how bad of negotiators they are? Thank goodness they're not union negotiators. You'd never get a raise. We'd never have health care if we put the Democrats in charge. Man, great man alive. But anyway, it's been averted. The Democrats gave enough that, and look, the Tea Party should be happy. They got more spending cuts than originally the Democrats wanted. Granted, you know, they had to give a couple of dollars, you know, five or six over to Planned Parenthood for now. As all indications are, they're still going to go after those, just in different ways. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this today in the Sentinel. The guy I like for county commissioner, Mike Fedor, had come out with what I thought was a pretty visionary idea. This plan to use some of the money that other states are turning their backs on for rail and bringing that money here to the central part of the state and building some light rail, some public transportation to move people around. You know, having a little vision, a little foresight, maybe taking a look down the road and saying, you know, this area is going to explode. The roads are underserving the people already. What do 10, 20, 30 years down the road hold for this region? Maybe we should now, while we have the ability, plan some public transportation routes. I'm all in favor of it. I think it's a great idea. Well, the current Democratic county commissioner, who I got to be honest, I never liked, I can't stand, and I'm glad he's going, because he was nothing but a Democrat in name only. He's come out and said, well, you know, it's going to double, you know, even triple your taxes. And again, back to this idea that we're gonna scare people with the T word, so that they start to foam at the mouth and their ears start to ring with bells and their all their muscles tighten up and they go into convulsions because they use the dreaded T word. The reality is if we have infrastructure, if we have this rail line where people can then live around. You can have communities grow up around. I think it's a good thing for the area, and I don't buy into this. It's going to triple your taxes.
According to what Mike said, if they can get their hands on that transportation money, it will cost about $11 for each man, woman, and child in Cumberland County per year. That sounds pretty. That's not pretty reasonable. Awfully reasonable.
But again, you know, what this article was in the Sentinel today was nothing but a hit job. It was this Rivino who wants to keep his fingers in the pie, and as I'm hearing it, he's got some problems of his own, which is why he didn't run for re-election. Probably couldn't have won anyway. But look, at the end of this, he wants to have his guy in there, and his guy, you know, if you like the way things have been going, if you like the visionless leadership, I think Rivino's people are the ones you probably want to get in there. And I look at this, and, you know, I'm not telling you who to vote for, but for me, I want somebody who's going to look ahead. I want somebody who's going to look down the road and say, this area is exploding. And just in the years that I've lived here, in this central part of the state, I have seen farmland going away. I have seen developments popping up. I have seen the growth of this area, which has just been remarkable to this point. The next 5, 10, 20 years are going to be much more than that. And if we don't do something now, if we don't push forward now on this, I fear that we're not going to be able to. That if you do not have the vision to say, okay, you know, maybe we're not going to build it today, maybe it'll be 2-3 years down the line, but we're going to start to lay the foundation. The way they're making it sound in this article is, oh, he's going to do it right now, it's going to cost us all this money, and we're going to be stuck with it. No, he's saying, look, have some leadership, have some vision of what tomorrow is going to look like. Start planning out the route it's going to take. Start planning out how you're going to implement the different ins and outs and all of that. Sounds smart to me. Problem is we've been so indoctrinated to foam at the mouth whenever someone says taxes, that we're going to, I think we're going to put ourselves in a negative position. Because what happens when the other communities tie into that and we're the one not in it? We're going to be the ones left out.
Well, think how far down the trail we could have been right now, Rick, if they would have done it 5-6 years ago when they had a chance. And because they didn't have, I don't think it was just lack of vision, Rick. I think it was lack of
leadership,
lack of courage to say, look, yes, we're going to have to raise your taxes slightly, but this is something we need, and in the long run, it will benefit each and every one of us. Not only to eliminate traffic, but from an economic development standpoint, it's just a very, very positive for the area.
Call it what you want. And I say it's a lack of vision. It's a lack of leadership. You say courage.
It's both.
I'll bring that in as well.
It's both.
Here, the reality in all of this is we could right now have the line mapped out. See, this is the path it's going to take. You pave it over right now and you run a bus you run buses on those lines. If you really don't want to put track down. You figure out a way to get public transportation back and forth on those dedicated lines. Something, since they seem to be hopeful for that. They want to put more buses on the road. And I'm going, well, what's a bus going to do when the bus is sitting in traffic too? At some point, the allure of public transportation is that you're moving while everybody else is stopped. You know, I've seen places where the train runs right along the road, and in Cleveland, I've taken the rapid transit down into the city, and there I go by all the people who are sitting on the highway, and I wave to them. Hi, how are you? Congratulations. You're wasting a lot of gas. Now, stop and think of how much fuel we will save by taking X amount of cars off the road. Think of how much other things we would be spending money on instead of having to have two cars. Like my wife and I have to have two cars. You know, I've got to get back and forth to work because I work further away. She's got to cart the kids around. It would be great to have one car. I could take the train into here. I think it'd be great. But we have leaders who are completely without vision, completely without an idea of what this region is going to look like. And look, you know, we can continue down the same path. And I think Eichelberger was right. You know, you're going to continue. You want to have visionless leadership? Vote for us. Because he said this one statement, I forget what it was, something along the way. Well, we could go back to the days when we didn't run government right. And I'd say like now, I mean this whole residential assessment, the property tax reassessment that they've completely bungled, and they've basically screwed over the residents of Cumberland County. I think that's one place Mike should start. That's where all these county commissioners should start.
Well, that's another thing. Mike said he is willing to go back and attempt to straighten that situation out. And that's not just in Cumberland County. It's all over this area.
Yeah, I wrote them and I said, hey, I don't mind paying taxes. I understand that taxes are the way that things get done. I understand. I just want them to be fair. I bought my house, paid $160,000 for it. And this was back before the collapse, 2004, bought the house in January of 2005. Paid $160,000 for it. They're telling me now, after a major housing burst, that my house is worth $233,000. And I called them. I said, hey, I'll sell it to you now for $200,000. There's just no way that in that period of time, having a massive housing burst, having the bubble completely burst and having the collapse that we're having, that the value go up $73,000. Didn't happen. Wish it did. Didn't happen. 1-888-520-RICK back after this.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Here's a big surprise. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie this week called teachers a bunch of political thugs. called their the teachers union. And what I love about this, and again, it goes back to this whole, the ability of the right to do a great job of divorcing the teachers who make up the teachers union from their union. I love this whole, and they're doing a great job of it, because average everyday people that I talk to go, well, you know, I don't have a problem with people being in unions. It's just those union bosses. I mean, you mean like the people who used to be union members, who used to be rank and file people who move their way up and want to do what's in the best interest of their members, their friends? Yeah, you're right.
Elected.
Yeah, well.
Every couple
of
years.
Come on, you know, you don't want to talk about that. But I love that language from a governor calling teachers thugs. How very nice. How very.
And I wonder where he got. I wonder what kind of school he went to. Who taught him his ABCs?
Yeah, Mama did. He was a homeschooler.
I wonder who taught him his manners. You know, he's a for lack of a better word, a little bit of a wise. You know what?
Well,
wiseacre is that? It's as clean as I can get.
There you go. I would have thought of something much, but anyway. Anyway, the World Health Organization on Wednesday warned that drug resistance, fueled partly by misuse of antibiotics, is killing hundreds of thousands of people a year, and they urge action, and they say, you know what, you better use your drugs right. I got yelled at for this, and my doctor, he educated me on this. I went to him. I get this upper respiratory infection. It's every year. It's like clockwork. And for those of you who are squeamish, close your ears. Every year I go through this series. I get like mucus in my lungs. It's clear, and then it turns yellow, and then it turns green, then dark brown, and then really dark and really viscous, and then it goes back down. It goes from dark brown down to dark green, to light green, to yellow, to clear. So one year I decided, you know what, I got to go try and get an antibiotic. My wife finally, after a week and a half of having it, finally conned me into going to the doctor. Now understand, I've got probably the best healthcare money can buy. And you have to twist my arm to go to the doctor. Which, you know, again, this whole concept that the right loves to throw out there, if you give people that Cadillac healthcare, they'll do nothing but go to the doctor. I've got the Cadillac healthcare. And it takes my wife, she needs to beg, borrow, and steal. She needs to threaten me with the threat of being sick all by myself. Because she said she'll leave me. So I go to the doctor, they give me an antibiotic, and after a couple of days I started feeling better. So I went back and I said, I'm feeling better. And he goes, well, what'd you do? Did you finish the prescription? And I said, oh, no, I feel better. And he went ballistic. I was thinking the ape, and then the other word, but ballistic is a good way of putting it too. See, terrestrial can't use the dreaded S word either. But you know, he went out of his mind, and he went down this whole road. Man, you're killing people in Africa and killing people in China. I'm going, what are you, my mother? If I don't eat my beans, someone in India is going to die. And it's true. I mean, and you see this report from the World Health Organization. What happens is we don't take the full dose, and it doesn't kill the virus. It doesn't kill it. So what it does is it makes it stronger. That phrase, what doesn't kill you is going to make you stronger. With these germs, it evidently does. With these, and it makes it drug resistant. And what happens is what we have are antibiotics that don't work. How many people remember erythromycin? I'm well past the erythromycin. I don't even know they make it anymore. Because we have grown, the sicknesses have gotten so much worse. And the antibiotics we need are so much stronger. Strange stuff. So take your medicine. I guess that's the theme of that piece.
And it saved your marriage.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, my wife literally has to threaten me. I cut my hand on a rusty nail. Probably like a 5-inch cut on my hand. And it was just the top layer. I mean, you could peel it open. There was some skin in there. But it wasn't deep, and it didn't need stitches, and it was none of that. So I just, I dumped it with some alcohol right on it, which hurt. And I put some Band-Aids on it. She just went ballistic. She's like, you're going to the doctor. You get locked jaw. I'll leave you on the ground dying. And then, And she said she'd never forgive me if I died and all this. And
it probably needed to be cleaned out, right?
No, I had to go get a tetanus shot. That's what she was whining about. But and look, hey, somebody cares about me. I should be happy about that. But yeah, you know, you've got to basically threaten me with death before I'll go to the doctor. And you know, so that whole premise that I hear from my friends on the radical right just doesn't fly with me. I mean, how often do you go to the doctor?
Only when I have to.
Only when you fall out on the Capitol steps.
Oh. I do remember that. That just happened to be heat prostration.
Yeah. Prostration?
Isn't that the word?
Heat exhaustion.
Heat exhaustion? Okay.
Well, you know, whatever. Anyway, today, again, back in 1935, the Works Progress Administration was approved by Congress. It was part of President Roosevelt's New Deal back in the 30s. When almost 25% of the country was unemployed, it created low-paying federal jobs that gave immediate relief to some 8.5 million working people in this country and also gave them some skills. They built bridges, they built highways, they built public buildings. They did arts programs, all kind of stuff, put people back to work, put money in their pocket to try and generate a little economic activity. Instead of doing what we're doing now, and again, you know, they have an agreement, not sure if it's going to, you know, it's going to pass. I'm sure it will in the House. But instead of saying, let's slash and burn, I say we should be investing and getting people back to work. And then, over time, you pull that stuff back. I don't think the time is now. I'm sorry. I just don't see that this is the time. I think this is a bad time to be slashing, a bad time to be taking things away from people, just plain dumb. And look, this is what staying home back in November caused. This is all those people who, you know, I'm upset with Obama. And look, he's setting himself up again for 2012. So Obama better come around and wake up. He's got to do something for his base. He's got to do something for the people who did get out there and bust their hump for him. And these trade deals, backing off on this might be a good start. But anyway, it's one of those things. Also today in history, because I like history, 128 convicts who were put into the coal mines in Birmingham, Alabama, were killed when the company, again, didn't bother to, you know, worry about the ventilation, didn't worry about anything but running coal, caused an explosion at the Banner coal mine, killing these 128 miners. What's interesting is they were mostly African Americans, and they were basically jailed for nonsense. So this is one of those nice little wink, wink, nod, nod. We're going to put people in jail so that we can get cheap labor out of them. Since slavery is illegal, let's put them in jail. And then say, well, you want to get out? You can go work in the coal mine. We'll let you out. That's what happened on this day back in 1911. Also today, back in 1918, President Wilson established the War Labor Board, composed of representatives from business and labor, to arbitrate disputes between workers and employers during World War I. Look, the workers were tired of getting screwed, and they were going on strike, even though, you know, unions were not legal yet. The workers were saying, you know, we've had enough, and they saw the opportunity. So again, you know, when government stepped into this stuff, it was to make peace and to benefit the employers. Understand that. Same thing with the National Labor Relations Act. So there you go, our labor history of the day. Do you feel smarter?
Absolutely. I'm ready for the weekend.
I'm glad I could share that. I am too. I'm going to spend tomorrow. I'm going to take my 5-year-old out to the park. We're going to take the stick and get the baseball and do a little swinging.
That's going to teach a kid how to hit.
Yeah, my boy needs a little work. And you know, the thing is, you know, he's got the talent. He's got the interest.
Was your wife a good softball player or what?
No, she wasn't an athlete. We're hoping, and this is kind of how the whole thing goes. We're hoping that my kids get my common sense and my athletic ability, and that they get my wife's brains, because she was the really book smart one. You know, straight A's through school, all that. That's what we're hoping. Anyway, no government shutdown, as we know. So that's good. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the blood of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. The must space coming to the USP.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO.
Mark mentioned it, so will I. Fundraising never ends here. Trust me, I keep paying my dollar for the Powerball, you know, because if I ever hit that sucker, I'm paying everybody back. That's the truth. That's one of the things I think about, because I was raised on that the pressed down, shaken together theory. But as it stands, fundraising is what keeps all of us going. You know, we need to raise $625 a week, and we are into April, and we're only about five.